Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to the Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. My name's Barry Prince. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. I'm broadcasting through the facilities of shakeandwakeradio.com. I'm also being simulcast on the Truth Be Told Radio Network. We are viewer-supported stations, guys, so if you like the content, you like what these people are doing, I know that both organizers and runners of these organizations could use any kind of help that they could give them. Even a coffee every month would be much appreciated. I also like to start my show off thanking my producer, because I always think and I always forget to thank him at the end. I love what Steve does for me, and I much appreciate it. Been a big blessing in my life. I've got a gentleman on for the first hour here. I haven't had Shaziz on for probably about a year now since we've had a conversation. I do shows on a weekly basis with Shaziz on a show called The Knights of the Roundtable on ShazizRadio.com. It's always a pleasure to have a chat with Shaziz. And I'm going to start the show like I always do. I like to ask my guests their pet peeve of the week. So welcome back, Shaziz. And what is your pet peeve this week?
Fuel prices. You know something, Barry? I usually get people annoyed because I'm a guy that studied science ever since I was a child. And I'm sitting here telling people there is absolutely no such thing as fossil fuel. And that really gets under people's skin, because in the public indoctrination centers, that is the schools, that's what they tell you, that the dinosaurs made all this oil, this nasty crud that we drag up out of the ground. And in reality, we live in a carbon-based world. You know, am I saying that dinosaurs probably didn't contribute it to making crude oil? Well, anything that is bio, like plants, sticks, dead bugs, fish, people, whatever, algae, all of that is what made up all this oil that we seem to have to fight over all the time. You know, we have this big old battle for resources. And here in the United States, at least, I don't know how it is over where you're at in Canada, but here in the United States, we're on the petrodollar. We used to be backed by gold. And so this is all a scam connected to the financial situation because of scarcity, where, you know, hey, there was only so many dinosaurs. We're going to run out of that in 20 years. No, wait, 20 years later, what do they say? We're going to run out in 20 years.
We found some more dinosaurs.
Yeah, found some more of them. Yeah, that's the whole dang thing, man. So you go to the dang gas station, and look, I'm not even trying to promote, electric cars or anything like that. I could get over on an internal combustion engine that was literally at least 80% efficient. Our internal combustion engines are only 20 to 30% efficient. So that means most of that high dollar fuel that you pay for, it goes out the tailpipe. And that kind of ticks me off, because we can re-engineer these dang engines to literally run at least 80 to 90% efficiency, if not even 100%. What do you think?
What would that do for mileage?
For mileage? If they were running at 100%, you would get some serious gas mileage. I mean, anywhere from 100 or more miles per gallon. I don't know what that equals out in kilometers, because I have a hard enough time keeping up with miles.
Okay,
I'm a scientist.
I want you to explain to people exactly how you could take your engine from 30% efficiency to 80 or 90% efficiency, and can that be done by somebody in their garage?
Well, I suppose it could, but the first thing you need to do is have a little bit of understanding of why you're only getting 20 to 30% efficiency to begin with. See, the biggest thing is when you take your foot and you mash down on that gas, everything's happening for you in that engine, but you're not thinking about what's actually going on in that engine. See, when you mash your foot down on the gas, that tells the computer to and everything inside there to squirt more fuel inside there, because you got to go faster. You got to squirt more fuel in there. But as the faster you go, the faster those pistons are going up and down. So you're shortening the time that you have for complete burn. In order to compensate for this extra gas, you have an O2 sensor in there and a throttle body positioner and all the different airflow meters and stuff that work with the computer to throw more air into that intake to mix with that fuel so that you'll get a better burn. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, you're spitting fuel out the back. Now, you ain't going to see it like liquid going out the back, but, you know, you could get behind a car and you can tell that it's not getting a proper burn by the smell of it. You can see whether the car is running lean or not so lean or whatever. You can tell by the color of the exhaust out there. But so you need to figure out a way that instead of having those injectors squirt all this fuel in there, to realize that that piston is going up and down faster and that you have less time for a burn and have that computer compensate for that less time and put less fuel in there, such as, when you first start that thing up and the fuel injectors kick on, and we're talking fuel injectors. Some people were thinking carburetor, but it's the same thing. There was a guy that actually built a carburetor that would give you 100 miles to the gallon, but, they shelved that idea. But anyway, so when your fuel injectors are squirting in, if you've ever seen a fuel injector squirt, it's a solid stream of gas. You don't need that much fuel inside that cylinder in order to get a burn. If you had that readjusted those injectors to put a vapor in there instead of a stream of gas, that's more than enough to burn. Because if anybody's ever noticed it, vaporized gas, it catches fire. It explodes faster than, liquid, if that makes any sense to you.
It does make sense. Absolute sense.
So if you customize those injectors to, instead of squirting a stream of gas into there, you're putting a little puff, a little vapor in there, sort of like using a sonic vaporization system. You know those foggers that they use at the concerts that make all the cool clouds and everything? That's just vapor. All right, they got this sonic vaporization that will basically break all that down into really fine particles and make it like a fog. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense. Everything you're saying makes sense. I mean, anytime you add oxygen to a fuel mixture and turn it into a mist, it only makes sense, common sense, that it would burn much more efficiently than gasoline that hasn't had oxygen added to the mix when it's in its internal combustion state, correct?
Yeah.
That's what you mean. Okay, so you do that, though. What's going to come out of the tailpipe as opposed to regular gas going in? How much efficiency would that make in a difference?
Well, you get a complete burn every time, so you'll get very, very tiny quantities of what's left over of the carbon, the unburnt that doesn't make it through the system. But if you get a good hot enough fire inside there, you won't have anything coming out that exhaust but hot air. It's that simple. You know, we put all these different types of detergents and all that in order to clean off the carbon inside those engines. If it wasn't for all that excess carbon, then you wouldn't have to have all these detergents in there. And those detergents, they add extra chemistry to what's actually coming out of that exhaust.
Right.
And so by re-engineering the way that we inject our fuel would be the first key to getting your efficiency down. If you think about the inside of an internal combustion engine, in order to improve on that engine, you got to figure out where all the weak spots are, where the weakest part of that engine is, such as the one with the lowest thermal breakdown point is going to be the weak link in that engine. That's where it will fail first. Like, say your gaskets are made out of cork or rubber. Those have a lower melting temperature than all the other things on there, so obviously that's going to be your weakest point. So if you can keep that engine temperature down to lower than the thermal breakdown point of that weakest part, then that engine will never fail. Mm. One of the problems with the internal combustion engine is in the rings. And you have most engines have a split ring system in there. Actually, all of them do, but they have a ring system that has a split in every ring. So if you got three rings on there, there's three splits that go straight down that side of that piston. And so whatever carbon that you don't burn off, it ends up you get carbon blow by past that piston. Whenever you get your you're on your compression stroke, and then it's on its way down. that explosion inside there will literally blow some of that carbon through there. Diesel engines are worse for it because of the way that they actually burn the fuel. If you notice, diesel oil will get super, super black and cruddy real fast. Whereas a gasoline engine, you're getting a better burn with the gasoline, but you're not getting a complete burn with the gasoline, because the harder you push down on that gas pedal, the faster that engine goes and the less time that you have for a complete burn. So you get your best mathematician together and you figure out how much power that it actually takes to push that piston down. You can inject the exact amount of fuel depending on the exact RPM that engine's turning at, so that you got a complete burn every single time. That will raise your efficiency up incredibly. And from that point on, if you can solve that ring problem, any excess carbon that doesn't get burned off is going to go out the exhaust and not blow past the rings. For example, you know, if instead of having a split ring system, you redesign that piston to have a multi-layer where you put some material in there, such as like maybe Kevlar, something that's softer than the cylinder, but sturdy enough and has a really high thermal breakdown point, so that you're not burning it out. So basically, you'll keep a seal from top to bottom on that piston, instead of having that little section in that rings, each one of those sets of rings that don't that have that split in there. So now you're not only going to have better compression, because you're not going to have to worry about your rings ever wearing out or your rings actually scarring the cylinder. Most of your internal combustion engines, a lot of folks don't realize this, the gasoline engines are not designed to idle for very long, because they will literally start to wear a lip inside there. Your piston's only going up and down so far, so it'll wear a lip inside there, and after a while start tearing your engine up. Whereas with a diesel engine, diesel fuel is more oil-based, and so it keeps your cylinders more lubricated. In a gasoline engine, you're getting your oil from underneath the piston, and when those rings go bad or you get something in the valves that isn't functioning or sealing right, you can actually get oil into your cylinder, and that's where your smoke's going to come out. But you solve that problem with the blow-by on the deal and get a complete burn, you will never have to change the oil in your car again. Because you're not, when that carbon blows past those rings, it starts to act like sandpaper inside your oil. Your average engine runs at anywhere from 160 to 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit, depending on what engine you're running and how hard you're running it. Well, that's your limitation of how the temperature is. But if you actually measure the heat off the intake, you're talking about extreme heat now. So that engine's a whole heck of a lot hotter than you think it is, especially at the exhaust portions of it. So if you can re-engineer that engine to get a complete burn every time, and you can re-engineer the cooling system to keep that engine, including the manifold, down to a reasonable temperature that is nowhere near anything with a lower melting point, then you will have an engine that's nearly indestructible.
You know, we get into these conversations and shit. I'm quite honest about myself. I'm not a mechanical kind of guy. I understand the basics of what you're talking about, but I'm hoping that maybe today one of the listeners out there, we spark some interest in somebody that's actually got a great deal of mechanical ability, and they start paying attention to some of this, because we're seeing fuel prices go right through the roof right now, and they're not going to stop, especially in Canada here. We have a real problem, and it's called the carbon tax. And what the government's doing with that is unbelievable.
How much is your fuel per gallon?
We're at $1.56 a liter this morning in Terrace. There's 4.5, well, Canadian gallon, I think it's 4.5 liters per Canadian gallon. So let's do the math, would be about $6.75 a gallon for Canadian gallons, which are slightly bigger than a U.S. gallon. I think it's 15% difference between a U.S. gallon and a Canadian gallon. So if we equated that out to American money, took that off, that 15, okay, divide that by that, that's 6 times 15, it'd be about $5.60 U.S. a gallon.
Holy heck.
Right now in Canada.
You guys are getting robbed. We're at like $3.09 a gallon right here.
I know what's happening in Canada. Of course, our great government brought in the carbon tax there a couple of years ago. And of course, when they brought it in, they promised the public that it would stay at a set level and they weren't going to run it up. And, you know, this is just a promise. It's not going to go up, not going to go up. Well, he's raised it twice now and he's going to raise it again. He's just, the government here is completely out of control. And what they're doing with the carbon tax is just outright theft. None of this money is having any effect on our environment. It never will. It's not designed to do that. It's just another tax to rob the Canadian people. It's unbelievable what they're doing with it. And our gas prices, our gas, we should be at 90 cents a liter. And we're at $1.56 now.
I wish that I could get somebody who had access to a CAD program and a machine shop to take me dang serious when I tell them, you can literally build an engine specifically designed, specifically engineered to run on pure distilled water. I can explain that to them in graphic detail exactly what needs to be done in order to get this to run. But if you know anything about basic science, water is a fuel. Water has its own ignition source. It's the most stable molecule in the history of time. It doesn't like to be separated. When it is separated, it will actually release a charge. When the hydrogen, oxygen are yanked apart, it will actually release a charge. But nonetheless, if you go look at all these different things like boiler explosions and stuff like that, people think that those explosions are steam pressure, too much steam pressure. And, well, in basics, yeah, you overpressurize the thing and, yeah, it blew up. But you're seeing a hydrogen explosion, a hydrogen implosion and an oxygen explosion at the same time. Most boilers run anywhere from 650 PSI to 1,250 PSI. The water molecule inside there, when you heat it up to the point where it's into steam, water will start boiling at 212 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level. After that, it turns into steam, and once you build up that steam pressure, it's already expanded 1,600 times its volume, and so you got a lot of pressure going on there. Well, those little molecules, water molecules in there, they're bouncing around rapidly. I mean, they're just going insane. Imagine if you overpressurize that thing, and now these water molecules are literally being ripped apart. And that expansion that you had with just turning it into steam is now amplified, plus you have that ignition source from the heat, the pressure, and the water molecule being ripped apart. Now you have a big, massive explosion and an implosion simultaneously ripping things apart. That's how powerful water is. But you can control this on a smaller scale, and you could build an internal combustion engine that would run just like a gasoline engine, similar to the way a diesel engine works. It would have compressor technology. It would have induction heating technology. It would have all the best physics from all the best machines out there working together to do exactly what the water molecule is capable of doing. You put that water into a microwave oven. You turn it on 2 minutes, and the water starts to boil. All right, you got that part of physics down. That's just sending a little short, super fast wave through that water molecule and rocking it back and forth until it produces friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food. So now you know you can heat that water up to extremes. Imagine if you took a higher and a faster wave and you literally ripped that water molecule apart. You didn't give it a chance to boil. It's moving so rapidly, you just ripped it apart instantaneously. You're going to get ignition, regardless of whether you like it or not. That's science. So you got oxygen and you got hydrogen, and they just was violently ripped apart. Well, if you have a water tank, your fuel tank, and you got water in there, in places like, certain parts of Canada and Alaska, you got problems with freezing. You know, it gets cold up there. Well, it gets cold down here where I'm at, too, but half the year, and part of the year it's warm and the other part of the year is cold. So you got, you obviously got problems that you need to work through. So you have it in a heated tank where it keeps this water constantly warm above freezing temperature, so it never can freeze or anything like that. When you're ready to start using this water, you start to pump the water down your fuel line around an induction coil that's going around the cylinder. That induction is heating that cylinder up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit. So as the already preheated water is coming around the outside of that cylinder, it's picking up that heat. It's starting to boil by the time it comes around that cylinder. When it goes up through the equivalence of what a diesel engine uses to atomize that fuel to start breaking that fuel down into a finer molecule, by that time it's already preheated, ready to burst into steam. You take that through a sonic vaporization system where now it's going to break that water down yet even further into a really super fine mist. When it comes around for the intake stroke, when it injects that fine mist inside that 300-degree cylinder, it's going to instantaneously flash the steam, expanding 1,600 times its volume, slamming that piston down. Wow. Just like a steam engine, it's going to start off running like a steam engine. But then after that piston goes down, between the temperature, the pressure, and everything going on inside that cylinder, that upstroke is going to literally crack the hydrogen and oxygen, separating it on demand and igniting both of them, giving you an implosion from the hydrogen and an explosion from the oxygen, slamming that piston down. When it comes around to the exhaust stroke of the deal, when it goes outside and it ends up hitting the cool air difference, it's instantaneously going to recombine and turn right back into steam, turn right back into water again. So you're going to get water out your exhaust, plain and simple. And it's not rocket science.
The petrodollar guys aren't going to like to hear this at all. They'll probably come and kill you for saying what you're saying, but. I don't think so, because I think hydrogen technology now is a known fact, especially with people on the upper echelons of our society know that it's a reality. They're just working as hard as they can to keep it away from the people.
But go ahead. They're doing it all wrong. I mean, like electrolysis, you mentioned somebody was interested in how to build a hydrogen cell. It's ridiculously simple to build a hydrogen cell. You can use two flat plates of metal, preferably stainless steel because it won't corrode as fast. And you put it into a container. Most people use water and a little bit of baking soda to make the baking soda is to make the water more conductive so that you get the electrolysis process going. You'll get oxygen up one pole and you'll get hydrogen up the other pole. You can literally separate hydrogen and oxygen into two separate containers if you like and then recombine them later to do whatever you want with it. But either way, in order to make this a lot more efficient, a lot of folks have figured out that you can use stainless steel tubing as your poles, and you can actually squeeze more stainless steel tubing inside of, like, say you got an inch or two in diameter of a stainless steel pipe, and then you put a smaller pipe in there where it doesn't actually touch the side of the other one, and then a smaller pipe and a smaller pipe all the way down. You can increase the surface area, thus forth increasing the amount of hydrogen that you can do in that cell. But instead of using regular water, go to the drink section of your grocery store and find soda water. It's basically just carbonated water. That's it, carbonated water. Mm. And that carbonated water is already pre-treated, ready to go. You put that down inside that deal, and you'll get an extreme amount of hydrogen and oxygen out of that, using that soda water instead of doing it the other way. Because essentially, when you put baking soda in water, you're basically doing the same thing. Why not skip that step and just go straight to the carbonated water? Hmm. So we just took carbonated water, you know, the CO2. And we turned it into a fuel source. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I'll tell you something, Shaziz. If this ever goes viral, this information you're talking about right now goes viral, I'm going to invest in soda companies, soda water companies.
Yeah.
Right away, because we are run on soda water. You know, honestly, I've said it so many times, Shaziz, and we said it on your shows, if the general public really knew what could be done with water, we would be all running water in our gas tanks in a very short period of time. But this is the biggest threat, period, to the petrodollar and the control structure of our society. So my concerns are, well, for one, for safety of people that are bringing this kind of information forward, because we know in the past a few of them have been snuffed. But I think what's the most important thing now is that people – take a look at this information that we're talking about, and we get it widespread in the public that many, many people are aware of what can be done. So if something was ever to happen to a good man like you or other people that are trying to push this, there'd be people to carry on the banner. You've said many times on my shows and your shows over the years that anybody that wants to get involved and do something with this, to actually put their hands on it, spend a little bit of money and get involved, you will give them as much time necessary to help them make it possible.
And that
is an awesome thing to say. I'm going to challenge anybody out there right now that's listening. I mean, here we're talking about something that actually will revolutionize the world. It is a reality. I've looked into this so many times over the last 3 or 4 years, and I always wondered why electric wires, when they fell off a pole, why they were dancing in the water when they're fighting a fire. And all you're seeing is, of course, hydrogen explosions. So the energy is there. All we have to do is harness it. It's really simple when you talk about it, Shaziz. Let's get involved. Somebody out there, come on. Somebody help me. I want to see it work.
We can literally even make a self-flushing hydrogen cell. You know, basically, when you start doing the electrolysis process, that's why I don't like the electrolysis process. You'll see crud build up in the bottom of that thing. And after a while, that crud will short things out, you know, and you don't want that. But I can even help them to redesign that hydrogen cell so that they don't have to worry about that anymore. And like I said, I'm not trying to get rich. I'm not trying to get famous. I'll tell anybody and everybody how to do it for free. If you think that I don't know what I'm talking about, anybody out there listening in, go get you some bottle of soda water, all right? Go get you a glass beaker or a container or whatever, and put those two pieces of stainless steel, like I told you, down there. Pour that soda water down inside there, and then put some dish soap right on the top of it, and then hook it to a battery. Take and light them bubbles with one of those little stove starters that they got for camping. You know, sit there and watch. You'll watch that. You'll light those bubbles because you've got hydrogen and oxygen going on. Hmm. See, back in the old days when we had lead acid batteries, they used to have a label on there. Do you remember? I know you got to be old enough to remember, Barry. They used to have doggone labels on a car battery that said that you have to make sure you don't arc across there because you have a risk of a hydrogen explosion.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it used to say that on there. They don't anymore. Yeah. But they used to say that. So you have a hydrogen cell in every car battery. That's what causes the battery acid to get low on there. When we say battery acid, we're thinking it's just got acid in there. It's not. There's water in there. You have a hydrogen cell going on right there in your average car battery. That is a hydrogen cell. It has a negative and a positive plate. When you connect it to anything, you have electrolysis occurring inside that. Most folks don't know that. Hmm. I mean, it's simple science. And the thing is, you know, I know I don't want this to sound arrogant, but I have this uncanny capability of explaining it in such simple detail so everyone can understand, which is really important. And I get people to get so pissed off at me, they will say, well, you're just oversimplifying it. It's not that simple. I said, yeah, it is that simple. If you understand electrical pressure, then you also understand water pressure, and you understand air pressure, because the physics all work the same. So if you want to know how electronics work, go look at your plumbing. Your plumbing and your electronics work identical. You got voltage, which is pressure. You got current, you got valves, and you can turn that valve halfway on, and so you can reduce the current flow on one side and ramp the pressure up on the opposite side, vice versa. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's ridiculously simple. And those little things like resistors in your computers, they're slowing down the current so that you're not overpowering something on the other side. You got transistors, you got diodes, and all these other things. They're nothing more than gates and valves on that circuit board. That's all they're doing. They're controlling the current. They're controlling the voltage. Voltage is pressure. That's what gets work done. So when I talk about high voltage, I mean high voltage, because voltage can be moved easy without the resistance that you have of current. If you got lots of current going through a wire, you'll burn that wire up if you got too much current going. You could put thousands of volts across that wire and never burn that up as long as you don't have the current. So that means I can move electricity from one place to the next rapidly, and I can use that pressure to then in turn pressurize a container such as a capacitor, and I can fill that capacitor completely up to its full capacity in a fraction of the time that I can do it trying to push the current to it without burning it up.
Well, I'm trying to keep up. Hey, have you had a computer for your brain all your life? I'm trying to keep up here. I understand, what you're talking about, but boy, it's hard to keep up with you, my friend.
it kind of got amplified on the mechanical side due to a brain injury that I sustained years ago. And I don't know what happened at that point in time, but somehow or another, my brain rerouted itself where I have absolutely zero concept of time. I couldn't tell you how long we've actually been talking at any given time. I have no concept of time. If I ain't got a watch on my arm, I could sit here all day long and not even realize it hasn't been, more than a minute or a year. I wouldn't know.
She says, I've been doing talks with you for years, and you never cease to amaze me at some of the information that comes out of your mouth. It absolutely, like I said, I hope there's people out today that, after we have our conversation here, will go to your websites and start following you a little bit and maybe seek you out for information. Actually putting to put into play what we're talking about today. Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing, folks. I'm not looking to get rich, I'm not looking to get famous, but I'm willing to help anyone who's serious about literally getting things done, because I got all these ideas running through my head 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and our world is in a jam right now. I want to help our world out, use this gift, or it's a curse to me sometimes because I very rarely ever sleep, but when I do, I sleep. It's a long story. I don't want to get into it, but either way, I don't have the funds to pay people. Like this one design that I'm doing right now, this generator, I'm going to show people a different way to use electricity, a more efficient way to use electricity. And as I'm doing this project, I want this project to be literally see-through, where you can look inside of it, you can see everything, and I can explain it to you in graphic detail, everything that you're witnessing right there. And you will understand not only how it works, but how to replicate it, the full entire thing. But to get one single part done, I got two molds that I need to make. I've been to actual companies that have vacuum forming machines. I just need them to take a block of wood that I've shaped, vacuum form that to make two molds that I can help to finish this doggone project. They want several hundred dollars up into the thousands of dollars just to make me two parts, just so that they can do a setup cost and all that kind of stuff. They want me to order thousands of these things when I only need two of these things. So it's not, I know how to do what I'm talking about. I don't have the machine skills to manufacture the things that I'm trying to tell you about. But if you've got enough faith, and if what I'm telling you is it makes mechanical and scientific sense in your head, and I can explain it to you that, and you have enough faith and you know how to run a machine, you know how to do milling and lathe and run a CAD program or even do whatever business side of the deal, I will tell you every doggone thing. And if need be, I will literally sign away all rights to any intellectual property. And if you go out there and make you $1 million off of it, I don't care. The only exception I want out of that thing is one stinking little prototype so that I can sit there and show people, I told you so. We are paying here $3.09 a gallon for gasoline for, the cheapest gas. That's not the premium. The premium's way up higher than that. But the thing about it is, every time you go out there and mow your lawn, every time you go out there and rake your leaves, you put it all up in a nice nifty little bag and you put it out there on the curb for the man to take away, you're giving away the same thing that you're buying from the gas station. You're literally giving away what they classify as fossil fuel. You can take those sticks, you can take those leaves, you can take the food waste out of your house, you can take the plastic waste out of your house, you can take the paper waste out of your house. You can use a process called pyrolysis. You can either gasify it or you can turn it into crude oil that you can then in turn take that crude oil and manufacture all different types of petroleum products, plastic, rubber, all kinds of stuff. You could take the algaes from your pond. You can take the duckweed, the watermill. You can take the weeds down. You could take the poison ivy out of your yard, put it in a machine, refine it into the crude oil. Everything that they call fossil fuel, you're standing on right now. If you got to clean that and wiping your nose, you're wiping your nose with fossil fuel. We live in a carbon-based world, man.
I'm sitting here listening to this. I'm going, my God, Shaziz, if we could mass produce a small machine that everybody could buy and put in their yard, and they could stick that in their gas tank and tell the gas companies to go pound sand. Hang on, wait a sec, folks. Who wants to make it? Somebody out there, let's make one.
You want to make carbon? You do the same process. It just depending on how you want to heat this. See, if you deprive something of oxygen, You can burn off all the impurities out of a piece of wood, and you can take that piece of wood and you can whenever it's brand new fresh wood, it's heavy. All right, you can take that wood and you can turn it into pure carbon. They call it biochar. You can turn it into pure carbon, and now it is really super porous and really lightweight. You can turn that carbon into a plate for a battery, and you got a super lightweight biodegradable battery that you can then in turn use different things out there to for your electrolyte inside there, so that you've got a battery. It's so ridiculously simple. I tried to get a hold of Elon Musk because I wanted to talk to the man. If he's logical and reasonable, then I can teach him how to take that Maxwell Capacitor Company to the moon and back. Because what you got going on right there, when he bought up Maxwell Capacitors, he bought a gold mine right now, because the future of batteries aren't going to be nickel metal hydride, lithium ion, nickel cadmium, or alkaline, or even lead acid batteries for that matter. They're going to be more like those capacitors right there, because the energy density that you can get from a properly designed capacitor, aka a new style of battery. Right now, they've got combination battery, lead-acid batteries mixed with capacitors. That's the best top of the line right there. You got the boost, and you got the power. So if he re-engineered a few things, he could have those dang electric cars be able to pass every doggone charging station from here to Texas and back and not have to worry about it. With a few minor modifications, he can use everything that's going on around that car, including the actions of the occupants inside the car, in order to generate energy to put right back into that power bank. As you're blowing through the atmosphere, you've got a lot of things going on. That atmosphere out there, you know, the little molecules in the atmosphere are moving anywhere from 700 to 900 or more miles per hour, and they're bashing into your car, and they're exchanging charges all the way as you're driving down the road. You can pick up electricity while you're driving down the road. You can use ram air induction to literally pick up fuel on the down the road. Everyone out there knows what a dehumidifier is. It's a temperature difference. You pick the air up. You suck the air in. It's hotter than heck outside. It's warm inside the car. That temperature difference is going to cause that hydrogen and oxygen to combine and create moisture that then in turn you could put it in your fuel tank. And vice versa. You could turn your fuel tank into cooling, you know? If you heat up any gas, if you compress any gas, it will get hot. Once it gets hot like that, and you suddenly release that gas out into the atmosphere, it will instantaneously get cold. It's crazy. As a matter of fact, if you think I'm crazy, to do two things. Go to your air compressor and run it for a while. Put your hand up on top of the air compressor, and then tell me how big the blister is from the heat. Then take the other end of that air compressor and squeeze the air hose to cool down that hot blister that's on your hand, and you'll notice that when that air is being released from that tank, it's cold, and you got moisture coming out of there. You can literally pull water, H2O, right out of the air. So if you're in the state of California and you're complaining about you have a drought, you did not pay attention to mad science. You did not pay attention in science class because you're standing right next to a very, very large body of water. And if you haven't figured out by now how to change and purify that water, how to literally desalinate that water, then you haven't paid attention to mad science, literally.
Steve is itching to ask you a question right now, so I'm going to let him ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I spoke to you.
Yeah, it's nice to hear from you.
Sure. What do you know about three-phase AC, and why couldn't somebody rig something up to where a vehicle could, car or truck or whatever, could run on perpetual motion on three-phase AC?
There's no reason why you can't do it. You know, the laws of physics says a closed-loop system, there's always going to be energy losses and stuff in there. But see, here's the thing. Forget the perpetual motion terminology, because that'll get you nowhere. Even though I honestly believe that perpetual motion is possible, it according to science definition, perpetual motion is not possible. So you could argue till the cows come home with those turkeys about that. Closed loop system, losses in the system and all that. You know, hey, just forget it. But if you took, while you were driving down the road, and you had a solar panel on the roof of that thing that was efficient enough to literally put enough energy into a storage bank to keep that battery charged up, if you took the motion of those wheels as they're going around, as you're driving down the road, the forward momentum give you the flywheel effect, and it would literally charge that battery as you're going down the road. Yep. And keep in mind, we're not talking about you're putting it under a direct load, because if you go out to your wind turbine or a generator, and let's say you got a little hand crank generator, the moment you put it on the load, you feel that sucker automatically get harder. That's one of the losses that you're talking about, because they don't understand what's happening there. I can show you how to get around that loss where you don't have that happening right there. Essentially, every motion that car is making down the road, even to the extent of the rubber hitting the pavement, because every time you take any two different materials and you rub them together, they exchange charges. So you're building up static electricity. You're building up, energy from the sun. You're building up wind energy from the air around you. There's so many different ways in order to gather that. And so with a system that is almost perpetual motion, a few supplementary deals such as wind and solar and static and all the different things we just talked about, now you're not talking about perpetual motion as their definition goes. Now you have outside influence that are working in harmony with that system to make up for those losses. So by the time it's all said and done, using hydrogen technology, let's say I show you how to build a little one-cylinder engine that its only freaking job is to produce electricity. So you're going to run this thing off of water, and all it's going to do is produce electricity, and it's producing more than your alternator can do, and it's putting it into that power source so that you never have to stop and get fuel or charge up again. What do you think?
I think a lot of people would kill you for that information.
Well, that's what I'm kind of talking
it's
about,
not
though. Yes.
No, it's not. I know, but you know, tell that to the. Go ahead, Steve. I'll let you finish your.
Well, that's what I was kind of talking about. That's almost perpetual motion, but you know, it's using as little fuel as possible.
Yeah.
You know, myself, you know, Shazam.
What we just talked about, you would have literally perpetual motion. But if you tried to patent it as perpetual motion, they wouldn't do it, and they'd call it national security risk. You can't have this.
Yeah, Shazam. But I remember I graduated high school in 1982. I remember reading a article in one of those science magazines, something like. Science Today, or I don't know what it was. It was Popular Mechanics or something like that, but it was in the late 70s, like 79 or 80. There was a team of scientists that built a semi truck, you know, with a trailer loaded 80,000 pounds legally going down the road. And this tractor got 120 miles per gallon of fuel. Basically, that's just, almost, I can't do the math right now, but it's like 25 times what a tractor can do right now. Basically, a tractor trailer.
Do you remember those little toys that had the big flywheel in the center of them, and you pull the ripcord, and that dang flywheel would get that car to fly down the road?
Yeah.
Well, they actually have a system like that designed to literally assist that truck. So if you had this diesel truck, and you had a flywheel system on board there somewhere, as it's moving forward and that engine's running at its normal speed, when you come to a stop, that flywheel will keep spinning, and it will put electricity to whatever you need. And then you could turn around and use that electricity for whatever. So even while you're moving, you could use those laws of physics in order to begin to assist that engine to where that engine doesn't have to work hard anymore. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. But basically, a tractor trailer going down the road, fully loaded, 80,000 pounds, only gets about 7 miles per gallon right now. And it has for years. Has for 40 years.
So whatever system that they were using at that time to get more mileage out of that, I'm telling you, it is exactly what I'm talking about. There's so many different ways. You know, you got bicycle technology, free wheel technology that's amazing. You know, you can start pedaling your bike. Remember back in the old days, the pedals were solid, and if you stopped pedaling, the bike would keep pedaling with your feet on it?
Yes.
Nowadays, you can just kind of kick it back, and it will free wheel down the road. And if you take an old bike and a modern-day bike, you can outrun a modern-day or older bike because of that free wheel effect, because you can get that thing up to speed and just coast. So if this tractor trailer was using its forward momentum and it had some sort of freewheeling system in there that would disconnect the gears just like that doggone bicycle did, so you're no longer pedaling and you don't have the drag of the transmission and the motor that's actually slowing you down. You see what I'm saying? So at 60 miles an hour, the transmission would disengage from the engine and allow the flywheel to continue to spin, and that would keep that truck moving forward. It would be freewheeling down the freeway. You see what I'm saying? So you could do it through the wheels. You wouldn't even have to actually do it through the transmission. Technically, you could do it just like you did the bicycle. You're pedaling with the engine. Once you get past a certain speed, you can kick this thing back and allow the wheels to just freewheel down there, and you don't have the transmission and the engine trying to slow you down. And so, therefore, you get up to speed, you let it coast, and you'll get more mileage per gallon out of that truck.
One of the things that I've been following here in the last couple of weeks, we talked about perpetual motion there about 5 or 10 minutes ago, Shazam. And what I'm going to say to that is I'm absolutely convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that it is a reality that it's been kept from society. And I say that because one of the things I've been following lately a lot is what they're doing with magnets. I've spoke on my show before about an odd even configuration of neodymium magnets opposed to iron poles, but on an odd even configuration so the magnet never lines up on the pole. Well, there's people that have taken that to the next level, and they're producing generators that are using their own power to drive driver coils, a completely self-sufficient unit that's putting out incredible amounts of electricity. That exists today because of what they're doing with magnets. I don't know if you've looked into it, but some of these things were brought to my attention here in the last week, and it's absolutely the technology is just unbelievable. That it only makes sense in our world if we have a magnet that's got the strength of a neodymium magnet. Anybody out there that's never played with one, compared to the magnets we played with when we were a kid, they got, I don't know what it is, 30 times the power of the magnets we played with when we were kids. Well, if you've got that kind of magnet power, then you can make it do work for you. It only makes sense.
You know, science sits there and tries to tell us that the sun has been burning for how many billions of years? Anybody know that answer to that question? How long has the sun been burning?
Long time. I don't know. I don't have the date. Who knows?
And the Earth is in an elliptical orbit with said sun, and it's also tidal locked with a satellite, which is our moon. And all these years, it's been doing that, and it's got enough pressure to cause our waves, our tides in and out. It can cause seismic activity, and this has been going on for how many billions of years? How many years do we have to run something before it's perpetual motion? Eh?
Good point. I brought that up, Shaziz, because we talk about what you were talking about today, and then we factored that into the equation. The fact is that there's so many different ways that we can produce our own power now, and we haven't even got into some of the things we could have talked about. We could go for 3 hours, Shaziz, because there's all kinds of things that we haven't even touched on that we've talked about on your shows over the years. So we only have a few minutes left here, but so what I'm going to say is I want you to share people where they can hear your shows, talk about the mad scientists for a few minutes, because that's something I think everybody should tune in and add thought to the conversation on Saturday mornings. And then I'm going to let you say a couple last things, and I'm going to have to let you go, but I'm going to get you back in here real soon because I've really enjoyed listening to you talk today. And you know what? I don't get to talk a lot when you're on my show, but that's all good. But you have so much info. No, hey, you keep going, buddy. You keep going. I'm on a holiday here.
Get me started on science, and I'm like the ever ready bunny, because the real science is mad science. The supposed real science, they dropped the ball. Earlier, when you mentioned those magnets are going to be a key for the future of free energy, but not in the realm that everyone thinks. Magnets are, you know, a permanent magnet where you got a toroidal magnetic field around that thing is going to be used to help guide plasma technology. Plasma technology has the capability of literally turning anything you throw into trash into fuel to send you down the road and or use it for electricity purposes, for thermoelectrics or whatever. That's going to take a while to explain to people, but either way, magnets are going to be the key. You can induce a magnetic field, whether electrically or mechanically, it doesn't matter. You have already been standing on every single thing you need in order to get the free energy. Once you give this information out to everybody, if you want to get a hold of me, go to Shaziz.com. It has links to everything. Links to everything. You can come there. And if you come to ShazizRadio.com and Google's doggone Chrome or one of them trying to tell you that my site is not safe, you have to go up here and turn the settings on yourself. For some reason, they don't want people to come to my site. I wonder why. But nonetheless, bring a friend with you. Because if I'm talking about something on there that you disagree with, you got a platform. You can come on there and talk with me. You can help me troubleshoot it. You can tell me where I'm wrong. But don't come and try to argue the laws of physics, because at 9 years old, I knew more about the laws of physics than most folks know throughout this world today, because I paid attention in science class. So I'm not trying to violate any laws of conservation of energy or thermodynamics. I am taking those pieces of the puzzle. I'm taking the laws of physics and using them to my advantage to solve a problem that these supposed science folks out there and the world in general, the mainstream media and the governments of the world, are using to steal to literally steal from Barry, my friend Barry, who they're charging a carbon tax, which is based on false science. It's based on a freaking lie. I have thrown down the gauntlet. I don't care how many millions of years you've been in school or been a professor. If you got the cojones to stand in front of Shaziz Man and have a debate with me about science, bring it on, brother. Because I knew at nine years old that this whole climate change, according to the way that they explained the science, was a lie. And don't even get me started on the hole in the ozone layer. I about lost my cookies when they started that one right there. And one of these days we'll have to do a show about it. It was funny. So anyway, I'm sorry, folks. I didn't mean to go on a rant, but you want to talk about science? If you want to solve these problems out there, stop relying on the government. Stop asking Big Daddy government or Big Daddy corporation for permission. Don't expect any professor from any school to give you any kind of backing. You're going to have to get me, you, and the average Joe out there to do it. Somewhere in your community, somebody knows how to weld and they're dang good at it. Somewhere in your community, somebody knows how to run a CAD program, and they're dang good at it. Somebody knows how to run a milling machine. You bring me the dream team. I will give them the information to build those machines that's in my head, and I will hand them over to you in the world for free, and I'll walk away with a big smile on my face.
I'm going to pull the Duracell bunny out. I'm taking the batteries out now, Shaziz. But I'll tell you, my friend, the audience has been buzzing over the show today. I've been buzzing over this show. I got to thank you for coming in, and maybe you'll oblige me and come back in the near future and we continue this. We didn't even get into all kinds of other things that we've been talking about over the last 3 or 4 years. So thanks for coming in today, bud. Much appreciated.
Well, I really appreciate you, Barry. And we didn't even get to talk about the bioweapons.
There's so much. We could go for 3 hours, but I'm going to have to let you go. But okay.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Bye for now.
Hey, what's your friend's name there? Robert?
Huh?
Who's the guy that called me up?
Steve.
That's Steve.
Steve, sorry about that.
It's all right.
Santa Claus.
That mad science guy kind of see now. And thanks a lot, Steve. And if you have any more questions, just call me up on Skype. We can chat. It's no big deal.
Okay, thanks, Jesus. Okay, but I'm going to take a break, folks, for a couple of minutes, and I'll be back with Wayne Peters, and we're going to undo Canada.
Desert like thunder.
Welcome back, second hour, and thanks again to Shazuz for coming in. I always enjoy my conversations with that guy. I said he fails to amaze me with the depth and some of the knowledge he has in that brain of his. So I promise I'll get him back in the near future. Second hour here, I got another couple brains joining me. I've got Doug Force and Wayne Peters joining me. I had Wayne on the meme. I didn't know Doug was going to jump in today, but it's always going to add to the conversation when I put these two guys together. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. And why don't we start with the pet peeve for the week? I always like doing that. Caught you with your pants down. Let's hear it.
I didn't have to think about it too hard this week, being the week of Remembrance Day. If you showed a passport to attend a veterans event, you already forgot. That was my pet peeve of the week. It really stuck under my skin hearing and seeing some of the ways that veterans have been treated across Canada in the name of this political correct vaccine cult. It's just absolutely despicable how young teenagers working, low income earners, the minimum wage class has been forced into becoming Nazi enforcers for a political agenda. That's my pet peeve of the week. Poor kids.
Doug. Okay, Doug.
God, that's a really good one. Now I don't feel so. mine is less. Forward. My pet peeve is because a lot of people with their employers. Right? And one of the things that employers overlook all the time, they don't progress.
Say, Barry?
It is law.
You're breaking up pretty bad, Doug.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Doug. Yes, yeah. You are.
No, I don't understand why. Really good internet.
You don't have
like beep, 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 beep. Maybe they don't like what you're saying.
Well, that's really bad.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I don't know. As good as we got.
Wow. You must be really pushing some buttons, Doug.
I think I am.
Yeah, they interfere, but I've never seen that before. It's like they're zapping you from space right now.
Doesn't surprise that any better, no.
Nope, you're still breaking up. Oh, that's annoying, but I wonder why that's happening. We don't usually have a problem on Skype.
No.
Are you on a Wi-Fi connection?
No, I'm on hardline.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to leave then. I'll let Wayne. Okay?
Well, that's too bad, Doug. Maybe we could try calling you back in a few minutes and maybe the problem will correct itself.
That's what I think.
Or maybe just come back in. You'll still be in the call.
If it corrects itself. That was pretty wild, Wayne. Huh?
Follow the fails reboot.
That'd be better.
Yeah, no. Well, let's see if it makes any difference. He's joined us again. See if that's any better.
Is that any better?
So far, say a few words.
A few words.
Well, so far, we're hanging in there.
I was trying to say the one thing that kind of my pet peeve has is that employers are not impressed.
It's back to doing it again for me, Barry.
Yeah, Doug, it's not working out for us here at all, buddy. It's too bad. I don't know why that's happening, but it's not working out. You're coming in like bleep, bleep, bleep.
Have fun with it.
Oh, well, that's annoying. Well, I'll tell you what my pet peeve is right now, Wayne, and it just came to my attention today about the Sally Ann, how they're mandating vaccines for their employees. You know, years ago, I was reading articles about the Salvation Army and what they actually are now compared to what they're supposed to be in society. And they are a far, far cry from any kind of a Christian organization, as far as I'm concerned. This really, really got my dandruff up today. I don't know if you've seen the link on that or if you're following that story, but it's absolutely atrocious that the church is our last line of defense. And here we have what's supposed to be a Christian organization bending their knees to the satanic agenda being rolled out in our society. It's really disturbing. What do you think?
I, in all fairness, I have not seen that article or link yet, but what I can tell you that is the exact same step that we are seeing other supposed faith-based organizations, including churches, taking across the board. People are not understanding of the depths of infiltration that the state has taken with these organizations. And Patrick Moore said it best. We were talking about this earlier in a discussion with somebody. I don't even remember which one. There's so many these days. But all of these righteous organizations, once they start to win once they've won the honorable fights, they invariably become money-hungry machines, and they become completely detached from what they initially started from. And he said that from the perspective of, at one point, he kind of woke up and realized he was the last scientist on the board of directors for Greenpeace. And from that point on, it's always been a corporate propaganda wing for the opposition. So this is what we've seen gradually over time, little bit by little bit, all of these organizations, the churches, the Salvation Armies, the legions, all of these organizations have chosen government compliance over what was doing the right thing, because they were all becoming dependent on state funding and the perks and the nudge groups and the NGOs, the support groups, those kinds of things became the primary source of income, and they became money hungry machines. Sally Ann is absolutely no different. A good friend of mine just got fired from working at the biggest Christian church in Toronto because he did not want to comply to these illegal mandates. So this tells you, and I mean, the funny thing of this is that it's backfiring on them all, because all its people will do, and they've done this since the beginning of time, is they will just go and rebuild, recreate, and do it elsewhere. So churches and organizations that are not complying with these Nazi-esque mandates are exploding in growth and support. So when one door closes, another one opens, right? So the righteous organizations are setting themselves apart from those that are just nothing more than a leech on society. They live for the love of money, and humanity is not a part of their equation anymore, and they are definitely setting themselves apart from that in the real world.
Yeah, I was shocked, but I wasn't really shocked when I seen this come across the wire this morning about the Sally Ann, because I've known for years. I read an article, I can't remember who wrote it, but about 5 or 6 years ago, I read an article on the actual going on behind the scenes in the Salvation Army, and they're a long ways from any kind of a Christian organization now. So I'm not really shocked, but I am shocked, because they are kind of supposed to be standing for Christianity in our society, and yet now they're mandating the injection of this absolute poison, evil crap into people's body and making it part of their agenda. Disappointing, but not really kind of expected it from them. I'm seeing this from so many different organizations now that are supposed to be supporting us, but when push comes to shove, we know what they're all about. Go ahead.
It's the same with the Legion, right? It's the same thing. The Legion turning away veterans from events and from facilities because they're not surrendering or submitting their knee to these radical gene experiments. So this is absolute, proof that the corporation really does not care about people, rights, freedom, anything, law. All of that is out the window for corporate compliance, right? Everything that our country was built on is out the window in order for corporate compliance, and that's political reliability. That's the benchmark to not only just being able to live, but it's if you're not politically compliant, then you are being literally replaced from the world, excluded to the point of oblivion. And now heading into Christmas, the most difficult time of year for people already that are vulnerable and compromised, they are taking steps here now to you know, just completely hammer down on people again. And it's just going to be devastating, the residual effects, the collateral damage in our society that are being perpetrated on them as blatant crimes by a small group of individuals calling themselves governance and health authorities, which are nothing more than rogue criminal organizations. But the truth of it is that kind of ugliness cannot survive forever. Insanity is unsustainable. Crime sprees become exposed. And there is so much going on that the people aren't necessarily seeing, that it's hard to stay optimistic in this time of darkness. But this is unfortunately the reality that we are stuck in, and we have to look forwards through this and build towards that. And then we'll be able to start making the decisions and doing the things that we need to do right now so we can get to that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Hard to believe that we see going on right now, what we see going on in our world. It's like, why were we chosen to be here? And I say that once. I mean that. Why were we chosen to be here at this particular time in history? Why couldn't I have been born maybe in the roaring 30s or 40s when we had none of this crap going on? But here we are, and it is in our face, and we have no choice right now to stand up to it, because we know the repercussions if this keeps going on, the level of madness. Like you said, Wayne, it can't be sustained, but right now the damage they're doing in our society, well, I think they're going to have to answer to somebody someday that's a lot more powerful than me, and I take solace in that, my friend, because what else can you say at this point? These people are evil, and now they're coming after our kids, man. The other day we were talking about the new wing of the Toronto's hospital. What is that all about now, stroke protocol? I want to talk about that for a sec, because that sounds pretty insane to me, but let's talk about that for a sec.
I
shouldn't laugh. It's not funny.
Appalling. The level of insanity that they are using to justify their headlong march into this Borg society that is going to be sustained on nothing but pharmacare, that's where ultimately they're trying to herd us into. And so these guys and their evil agenda are being proactive. They're trying to get ahead of the problem that they're creating. So they know, they fully know, absolutely, unequivocally know that these concoctions are going to be having seriously damaging effects, including killing kids. Every actual honest expert in the industry is saying this is insane. Why are they sticking kids with this concoction to do what against an illness that they don't get? They don't even get COVID. And they're using this kind of radical justification to jab this concoction into kids, knowing what the outcome is going to be. So now they are being proactive and looking like heroes, because trying to set themselves up to look like heroes, because they are going to save kids from strokes while they're developing stroke protocols to be the standard issue one-size-fits-all treatment for what is actually, in reality, going to be reactions from these concoctions and the effects of these poor kids being compromised by being around adults full of these concoctions that are poisoning their kids reciprocally, and their systems are already being compromised by lack of oxygen through this insane diaper demand to restrict these kids breathing. So their systems are compromised. Their systems are under assault already from environmental influences of this concoction cult already. And so now they're going to start sticking them with this stuff too, because what? Why? There's no medical evidence to support this. So the only logical conclusion is that they're trying to kill them, and it's not happening fast enough.
Yeah. You hear what he's saying, folks? They're trying to kill the kids. Does that get your blood boiling? Because it sure gets my blood boiling. I want to, it gets me to a point where I want to get violent against these people. I know I can't do that, Wayne, but what other reaction can a person experience right now when we know what they're doing and they know what they're doing? They're doing it on purpose. These people are evil. They're not human, because humans have a heart. We love our children. We love our kids to death. And here these people are knowingly going to kill thousands of them if we allow this to go on. Wayne, I don't know what to say about that, buddy. I really don't. There's a special place in hell for these people waiting for them. Go ahead.
Absolutely. There is zero evidence to support any ethical, moral, medical, or scientific reasoning to force this concoction on kids. None. Zero.
Zero.
Nada. There is zero benefits to this, and only the potential for disaster in every single one of these kids. And I'll tell you what, I've got a friend of mine that started a project this afternoon about digging up the victims going public about the deaths of their family members. So this is firsthand evidence that can be corroborated of vaccine adverse reactions causing death in young people, adolescents, teenagers, and that. In 3 hours, she sends me a message back here, and I got this 15 minutes ago, so I'm pretty aggravated about this too. She has 40 pages of corroborated evidence of teenagers and youth dying as an adverse effects of this concoction, and now they want to stick it in your five-year-olds, people.
Is this from Canada, Wayne?
I don't know the parameters on this yet. This is just, she said that she was going to start this project today. And I said, great, let's have a look at this.
Wow. And this is shocking.
We need to start looking at the real problems, the real things that are going on. Stop being distracted by this garbage in the mainstream media, this programming, this crack fix that it gives people of false safety, and looking at the real problems. Now, this is going to be another tough one for people to digest if we're going to start talking about the real dark side of the reality that we're looking at. I get a message from a overflow crematorium in Edmonton. Now, this place only has the capability of looking after four people a day, but these people were in a state of distress because they only look after overflow stuff, right? Keeping that in mind, and they are burning two teenagers a day.
Wow.
Nobody's talking about this.
Wow.
This isn't accidental. What is going on? People need to start demanding answers. Start looking around them. Stop looking at the sunshine and lollipops that the mainstream media and their elected, bought-off officials are spewing, and start asking some questions. Start looking around them for real. These terrorism tactics, these torture tactics that they're using to enforce compliance through fear are nothing more than mechanisms for them to cover up the crime spree that they are initiating. And we're going to get into some nuts and bolts of this crime spree right here, right now. They are using, we've got these waves coming, and it is going to be overtaxing our health system. We cannot deal with sick people. We have not got enough people to deal with sick people. They're canceling everything that would save lives, killing more people through doing that, so they can protect themselves from a short staffed problem, staffing issues that are created by their own mechanisms. They are letting go hundreds of thousands of people across this country, that the most educated people in this country that do not want to take this concoction are being disposed of in place of sycophants that will follow the agenda. So now they are stuck in a position where they have 10 administrators per staff in the hospital to look after each bed. Now, this is a union problem. This is a management problem. This is a bureaucracy problem. This is an agency problem, not a health problem. This is a giant cover-up covering up the murder. How do you get rid of a problem? You get rid of the evidence. We are the evidence, and they are not talking about that. These are crime sprees of epic proportions. This is racketeering and genocide at a level unheard of in human history. And this needs to be talked about. When you start looking at the evidence that is absolutely being presented, but being discredited by the criminals, the evidence is out there. It exists. Just look up Doc Martin. You just look at up ethicsoverfear.com. You start looking at these places and start putting the dots together for yourselves. We exposed the Teachers Union of Ontario's records where their teachers, some of the 126,000 teachers in Ontario, have filed a writ of mandamus against the Teachers Union Investment Fund demanding that they dissolve $221 billion of their teachers union pension investments that are all tied up in, you guessed it, companies like Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, 3M, Microsoft. Every organization that is profiting from this genocide on us are exactly who the unions are invested in. And when you start seeing that across the country and all of these unions, who is then at fault? The bureaucrats that are eating like pigs off the trough, making between $200,000 and $700,000 a year to run one person and one hospital bed, while they're working, you know, putting in their pension fund investments, and the pension fund unions are invested in the companies that are profiting from murdering Canadians and now kids.
You know, Wayne, I really have a hard time controlling my anger, you know, when this information is brought forward. But I don't know about you, but I'm ready to blow up. And I know that's not the answer right now. We have to go at this intellectually, that right now we know the court system in Canada are corrupt to the core. But I honestly believe we can still use these court systems against Canada, against these people. And I see what Ethics Over Fear is doing right now. And let's talk about a few of the things we can actually do to push back. And before you do that, folks, on Ethics Over Fear website, you guys have to go to that page and listen to what Wayne had to say about the school boards in Ontario. The reason I say that is because he lists on that talk all the corporations that receive funding from the pension fund. It absolutely crosses the T's and dots the I's, doesn't it, Wayne, when we see this big push to get these vaccines into children? I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to cross-reference what's going on. And, boy, it's black and white, my friend. Go ahead.
Well, it's and this is where we have to look down the board, right? And this is where we're seeing now that there's enough people that are starting to ask questions. The team over there we're working with people already working on investigations in at least five or six different provinces now. And there, as more evidence is coming out, the problem that we're up against as a nation is, as you said it, the judiciary. And we've gotten to the point where this infiltration got to the point where these guys were able to place their selected people in the judiciary to make sure that most of this would go away. In law enforcement, most of this would go away. But the problem with this is all still realizing top-down implementation. So we have these rogue service corporations that sit at the top of this crime syndicate. They are the godfathers, called the Corporation of Canada. And from there, they control their puppets, which encompass the enforcement agencies, because they know we're not going to like this, so they have to be able to control us. So they've placed their people in the Senate and in the judiciary and in law enforcement. You know, we've all talked about for a long time about the, you know, Brenda Luckey and all of these kinds of things. Well, I mean, that's just one example of this corruption and infiltration of the syndicate, right? And this isn't just a pharma syndicate. This is a globalist syndicate, being where the spaces that we are led to voice our displeasure at are really just puppets and soldiers of other people. And understanding how deep that goes and the mechanisms behind that is incredibly important in all of this. So where I'm leading with all of this is we're facing up against activist judges, activist law enforcement agencies that are controlled, again, from the top down. But the problem is this top that they operate from is not the ultimate top jurisdiction in Canada. It's not. At the end of the day, every nation is absolutely governed by the court of public opinion. When enough of the public decides that it wants something different, they have the right and the ability and the duty to replace that those people that outgrow their britches and believe that they are the ultimate top of authority in the country and remove them from their positions. The laws and rules are nothing more than things agreed upon by a small group of people and then enforced upon the population. Well, at any point in time in history, it's been proven that when the population has had enough of said tyrants and their laws and edicts and false presentation, then they have the right and duty to replace them. So this is what, as fortunately and as horrible and as unbelievable and gigantic as all of this might make it seem impossible, it is absolutely real. People are dying every single day. The sooner we get through this state of trauma that our nation is actually in, and if you look around you, every single person that you know is trying to survive from a measurable state of trauma. They are damaged. Mm-hmm. Everybody, even those that are seemingly functional, that are fighting back against us, we're still trying to navigate while we're being injured. We are all being injured and demoralized. But the thing of it is what we're doing as a group over at Ethics of Fear and the other groups and organizations that we are working with is we are providing clarity. We are clearing the noise. We are eliminating so much of the garbage talk and the things that have no bearing or relevance and bringing it to the things that people need to be paying attention to the focus of where the damage and the attacks are coming from, what the enemy is actually doing, what this means at a real world level, and then we are giving them tools to defend themselves against this tyranny. This is what is so amazing and what we're doing. And the ultimate equalizer at the end of the day, and this is what every group, every organization, no matter what fight they're fighting out there, is ultimately looking for. They are looking for amongst all of their fights, they are looking for law and order. They want sanity back. They want answers to questions. And this is what we are doing to help people, communities at the grassroots level get a hold of the right weapons and tools so that they can force those things to happen. They can force investigations. They can force answers in a way using processes that the pirates and the law enforcement agencies and the corrupt officials out there cannot deny or silence them, because there is no divider in the law. There is no sense of homophobia or racism or any of those divider things in the law. The law makes us all equal. We are all equal under the law. As criminals, all face the same charges under the law. Ignorance of law is no excuse. So this is the lowest common denominator that makes us all equal again. So the sooner people understand the actual process of the law and how we can collectively assemble ourselves in an organized fashion using the right tools and weapons to actually have an effective fight back plan, this is where I think we're doing some of our best work in bringing groups and communities together and just giving them that foundation of information that they need to know to speed up the learning curve on what they can do right here, right now.
I couldn't agree with you more. When, you know, we're kind of in a pickle right now that we don't really have any other option right now. That what we're talking about right now is the way we have to go. That, like I said, you said many times and I've said that the systems are corrupt right to the core. But if enough people come forward and put it to the test, I believe that is the only route left to us right now, that we have to make the law work for everybody in Canada. We have to call out our police forces. And I'm starting to see that happen in Canada with certain organizations that are coming up. I'm seeing a lot of positives here in the last couple of weeks, but we really need to put our foot to the floor right now because they are absolutely completely out of control. And watch what they're going to do to Christmas this year. When you talk about devastation in society, watch what's going to come out of their mouths in the next couple of weeks. Beware, folks. Go ahead, Wayne.
This is going to be a really tough year to get through. I wish that there was some magic button or easy button that was would be able to, you know, bring in some superhero to wipe it all away. But the truth is, that's not going to happen. And we are never going – the longer we draw out this process of avoiding the hard discussions, the longer it's going to take for us to get to a semblance of normalcy as we envision it. A future with the potential and sunlight for our kids again, we have to do something now if we want to believe in that possibility. And we're seeing this happen. We are absolutely seeing this happen, but the problem is that it's not readily available to the masses as far as the what is going on behind the scenes in the pushback. The media is so one-sided. The narrative is so one-sided. The allowable public discussion is so one-sided that there's much to be hopeful for in this pushback that is happening. And at the end of the day, it still comes down to faith and knowing that God wins at the end of all of this, but that doesn't absolve us from our personal responsibility here on earth. And right now, the sooner people step up and accept the responsibility for doing the righteous things here on earth in our communities right now, the longer we as a society are functioning from a state of trauma and fear, the longer it's going to take for us to start accepting that responsibility and realizing that we are facing literally the potential end of humanity as we know it in God's eyes. We really are. This is gene therapy. This isn't a vaccination. This isn't something to help us fight off something. It's supposed to, now they're admitting to, if you're lucky, it might make your cold seem a little bit less like a cold and you still don't have a cold. But you better step up for your fourth one so you can feel better about all of this and add some more cocktails to your system. And this insanity cannot continue. And sooner we realize that we cannot allow them to continue down this path of dividing us and creating an us versus them society in the name of political correctness. Either you're willing to submit to the grand experiment or you must be replaced. This has got to stop. There is no good potential. If you're on the side of complying to this experiment, there is no beautiful future for you or your family, and that is a scientific expectation that you had better be prepared to take. And the sooner you get out of that system, the more the quicker we're going to get back to having the potential that was given to us to live on this planet, you know, in God's vision and His recreation as humans, doing, you know, pursuit of life, love, and happiness, and all those things that we should hold a lot dearer than we apparently do.
We've forgotten the lessons of the past, that's for sure, Wayne. I find this in 1937 Germany right now, and we know how that ended up. But the similarities between society then and society now are uncanny. But then if you use something in the past and it's worked effectively on society, you would use it again. Of course, they are. Problem, reaction, solution. But what they've added to that is the fear factor. What that's done to our society, well, what we've gone from 15 days to flatten the curve to now a completely socialist, segregated society that's just getting better by the day. They are not going to let their foot off the pedal. Soon, we won't be able to function in any shape or form in society unless we're carrying a vaccine passport. My God, Glenn, what does it take for people to see what is coming? It's just black and white. It's the trees are right in front of your face. And yet we see a lot of Canadians complicit still. And it just boggles my mind. It really does. I'm not a super smart guy, but I've got it figured out. So why can't other people take that responsibility now? Because what, like you said, what's coming for our future, our children, my friend? I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. You want to live in a full-blown communist country where everything that you've done is monitored. You're told where you can go, what you can do, when you can breathe, when you can't breathe. Well, that's where we're going, folks. I ain't going to have no part of that, Wayne. Go ahead.
It's going to be even worse than that. This is about plugging us into a matrix. This is about the AI interface. There is absolute political compliance when we are plugged into the AI system. We are already functioning from the social credit system. If you are not socially acceptable, you lose credit in society and you are extricated from it. You are literally exterminated in the social space if you're not politically compliant. Once we have gotten to this point of genetic manipulation becoming dependent on this continuous further genetic manipulation in order to protect us from the things that our God-given immunity system protected us for thousands of years, now a paper cut may be lethal to an entire state. That's what they're creating in all of this. And if you do not politically comply to this, this is where we're at now. But in the future, it's going to be – they won't have to worry about political compliance or renegades because they will have already manipulated those parts of our genetic beings that make us individuals. We will just happily go down to the end of the room and stand there when the robot delivers our next dose of juice. Right, that's what they're where it's ultimately going to go, because this is the ultimate slavery that the 1% envisions control. It's, what's happened, if to any rancher out there, they'll understand this. If they've got a herd that gets too big and they get a couple of high-headed ones in there, those are the first ones to the butcher shop because they give the other critters bad ideas and. Then they get hard to manage, and then next thing you know, the cattle rancher is getting run over and run down. Well, that's exactly what they are doing to us right now. And we are teaching the other cattle out there, because that's what they call us, when they use the term eaters, that's what they're referring to us. We are the cattle, the eaters that are eating the grass that is the resource that they want to keep their pretty little lawns. Which they envision as Canada is their front yard. That's how they see places like Canada while they're divvying it up. It's no different. They're just looking at it from a higher scale. They're not building a subdivision in a city in Canada. They are building Canada as their subdivision for the 1% elitists. And they will wipe out those that are, they don't like the looks of that tent city on their grass, wipe it out. This herd is causing a headache and causing more work. Just take it to the butcher shop, and that butcher shop right now, the crematoriums that are the overflow crematoriums that are burning two teenagers a day.
Well, I'm not trying to laugh at this because it's actually really, really a sad that we're having this conversation right now, Wayne. But in reality, you're spot on your assessment. Anytime in history you've seen a communist takeover of a society, the first thing they do in that society is eliminate any knowledge in that society, i.e. the elders in that society. Well, who do we see under attack right now in many, many different ways in our society? Who do they want to eliminate? They want to eliminate anybody that's going to speak against their agenda. And we can see that with happened. We see the Georgia Guidestones now being a real possibility. People read those years ago and they kind of chuckled. But really, what are they doing with this vaccine? What kind of weapons do they have put away? And I know that might sound a little deep, but what weapons do they actually have put away when they want to unleash it on the human race? We have no idea what they're capable of because we don't know the levels of technology they possess. That's something I think about all the time, how they could actually turn society upside down and we might not even see it coming. What do you think?
I can make another analogy that you Bush folk will even understand a little bit more. The whole pine beetle infestation. What happens when you guys get a pine beetle infestation? They look at new and creative and innovative ways to wipe out and eradicate the infection, the infestation of the pine beetle. Well, the elites right now are trying to deal with an infestation of freedom, and they are really trying to exterminate that infection called freedom that the people have decided that we are finally now starting to look at least a more collective sense of what can we do.
We really need to push back. I saw quite a demonstration yesterday in Australia. Wayne, did you see the video on that?
You got me at a loss on that one, but I know that this is happening all over the planet.
1.3 million they heard yesterday on the streets in Melbourne.
It's I don't know how much time we got left here, but
20 minutes.
Oh, cool. I'm going to kind of adjust an old Winston Churchill quote, and I'm going to say that we still have a long way to go, but I see the beginning of the end.
I share that optimism, Wayne. I see a change in society coming. I think people are really starting to become aware of the fact that this has nothing to do with the virus in any shape or form. What this is about is complete control of society. Anybody with any kind of common sense would sit back, take the time on their computer at night. And this is what I tell people, you got to go do this. Go look at the numbers of deaths. Go look at the actual hardcore numbers of deaths associated with the so-called pandemic, which it's never ever reached close to the parameters of a pandemic. But of course, the word pandemic strikes fear into people's hearts. It was called a pandemic from day one, never ever, like I say, got close to those parameters. But all that being said, go look at the numbers in Canada. And what you're going to find, folks, is that the numbers have variation in numbers between 2010 and 2020 are almost unrecognizable, Wayne. And I've looked at the numbers and I go, well, if that's the case, what has gone on in our society? When did we ever start testing for flu every year and report those cases to the media? When has all this stuff ever happened before in our society? And now we're putting masks on children at school. It's absolute insanity, folks, that we're doing this because, like Wayne said earlier in the show, those masks have absolutely no effect on our children. Why parents are outraged right now with this going on in our schools? What you're doing is you're creating hypoxia in these children. You're doing permanent neurological damage to these kids by putting masks on them. That's just neurological, along with the mental effect. You're programming children to be good little robots, to be in fear of everything that comes close to them in their life. The destruction we're doing to our children, Wayne, it brings me to tears, buddy. It really does. I mean, we are just destroying our children. Now we're going to stick an experimental vaccine into when their bodies are developing, their immune systems aren't close to being into full development, that what the effects that are going to be to our kids, we know they're going to kill kids. It's just, I don't know what to say anymore, my friend. I know that someday these people are going to have to answer to a much higher power than you or me, and their day of judgment is coming. And I take solace in that. But in the meantime, the hell they're raising on our planet, but I have a hard time explaining. Go ahead.
This you gave me an interesting thought here to make a comparison about in the word pandemic. This is the word that they use to justify all of the mayhem that they are inflicting upon us, or apparently, and under the word pandemic, this would suggest a natural event. Now, let's compare the word pandemic to the word genocide. What it looks like at the end of the day for the people digging the holes or burning the bodies is the same. It is dead people, dead people, dead people, correct? Pandemic, genocide. The only difference is a pandemic is supposed to be a natural occurring event that is an affliction upon a population that is killing the people. A genocide is a politically leveraged event to do the same thing. So now when people look at what's going on around them, everywhere around them, does anything look like this is a legitimate response to a natural occurring event? Or does it maybe look a little bit more like a biological war that's being waged upon you, and the shock troops are coming right in behind the gas attack? That's send them to the chambers. Versus pandemic.
Exactly. Send them to the chambers, man. Same thing.
You know, there's going to be a day where I'm going to feel bad for the judges that I'm going to be sitting in the gallery watching, knowing that every single person that has a seat in that docket is going to be finally facing justice. I am no judge, but I am going to, if it takes every last breath of me till the end of my days, I will be busy building a road, a sidewalk, a steps, a platform, whatever it takes that it's going to require to deliver these people to justice so that this can be done. This is where I spend my 100% of my focus on right now is we have, as an organization, we have a very clear and a much clearer developing vision of what this looks like on the other side, and a big portion of what is potential, the potential that humanity has to live and prosper under. We would never have this opportunity without this darkness, because not enough of the world would be aware of this darkness. It would not, if it hadn't gotten this bad, we would never take the steps to fix it. This all starts with building a new tomorrow together with the collapse of these systems. We can no longer plug the holes in these boats and return back to normal. There is no such thing as building back better. These systems are imploding. It's impossible for them to not implode. The sooner we get down to rebuilding our communities through alternative communities and measures, the sooner we get back to living the better tomorrow that we have the potential resources and capability of. We just need to eliminate this corruption at every level, and it's starting within the medical system. And I can tell you, I sit on the board of the steering committees of so many high-level leadership teams and groups. The stuff that is coming out through these creative minds being allowed to flourish, developing new systems without the shackles of corruption and bureaucracy, what is coming for humanity is so, so brilliant and so full of love and health and wellness. And there's a beautiful time in human history coming, and the sooner we can get people to take a little bit of responsibility for what's going on around them and join and take part in some of these initiatives that are making an epic difference. It might be tough to find them, but when you find them, you'll know in your heart and your soul when you look and see what they're actually doing. And this isn't the stuff you're going to find in the news. This is going to be raw and real, and this is going to be genuine people. And it is so inspiring to me what I am seeing coming down the pipes, the alternatives. Ethics Over Fear has just been invited as an affiliate to the new World Council for Health. This is an organization that is already spanning more than a dozen countries that is organizing to do no harm, to bring healthcare and medicine back to what it used to be, what it should be, and ultimately be there to replace these crumbling, collapsing systems that are so corrupt, so full of cancer, they just could not survive. And unfortunately, when one of the pillars of this crime syndicate starts to come down, i.e. the healthcare system, this is going to drag down a whole bunch of other systems, the pharma companies, the bureaucrats, everybody that's signed up for this evil agenda is going to come down in this house of cards. Nuremberg 2.0 is going to be a very, very busy place. Life is going to become so beautiful on the other side of this while we are watching justice take place. And there is such a mass swell of people that are looking to find a little law and order and find some answers, that are coming to finally the right conclusions and starting to have the right discussions, the right words. We need to be talking more about the genocide and who's responsible for that. When we start reverse engineering this stuff, from why are these people dying, to start looking at who are the real culprits behind it, and the evidence is becoming so, so clear. Doc Martin and his magic bow tie have helped connect so many dots that we were already building to. We've been building cases from the ground up. People like Doc Martin and Reiner Fulmick and Astrid Stuckelberger have been building the case from the top down. Well, these cases are really starting to come together, and it is becoming – the mountain of evidence is becoming more and more irrefutable. The problem is that we're up against a narrative and a corporate bureaucracy that has gone completely rogue, running their organizations like a crime syndicate, and they are going to start sending out the enforcers, and they are going to come at us with their next weapon of choice, which is more terrorism. That's what they're going to do. That's their only response. They cannot argue their way out of this anymore. They are criminals, and criminals will do whatever they have to do to not get caught. So this is where now it is – unfortunately, it is an us versus them society. It is the criminals versus Canadians. That's what we're boiling down to.
Well, they sure aren't hiding their true agenda anymore, Wayne. It's right in our faces. And, you know, over my conversations with you in the last year and a half, the time I've got to know you, and I've been privy to sit in on your conversations on Tuesday night and a few other things going on, I got to applaud you for what you're doing, folks. Anybody that is listening out there today that really wants to get behind an organization that really is starting to have some teeth as far as finding a little bit of justice in this country of ours, I urge you to get behind Wayne and Ethics Over Fear and go have a look at his website. He's got all kinds of legal documents available on that site that will give you answers to many, many questions. I get asked every day, Wayne, what can we do right now? People feel like they're just all alone, that they have no power, that this thing is overwhelming, that no matter what's going on, the government's just going to go full bore ahead with what they're doing. People have more power than they realize. Wayne, why don't we hit on that for a couple minutes, then I'm going to have to let you go, my friend.
So happy to hit on that, because what people are experiencing and where their emotional state is at is directly connected to what I was speaking to earlier, that state of measurable trauma and this state of learned helplessness. This is what controls us, is this state of learned helplessness. They have taught us to feel helpless. The constant barrage of narrative from our elected, so-called elected officials, our so-called legacy media, these guys continue propagating that learned helplessness. There's nothing we can do. We must remain dependent and compliant on the state. They're the only ones that can save us. This is where the disconnect from reality actually takes place. We need to understand at a fundamental, basic level, this is top-down ideology. They are making the bottom people do the enforcement and the implementation at the small business level, the corporate level, the municipal level. This is where the power of the implementation or stopping the implementation actually takes place. The power is in the individual within the community. Most of these boards sit with so-called elected officials that are nothing more than repeating incumbents that are never challenged for their positions. They sit there repeatedly getting fat off the trough and committing themselves to further and further bribery and complicity. And sooner or later, after years of being incumbents, they come to a point of realizing that they are now owned through their own actions, and then they must comply. This is where we are at. So what people need to do, and they have every bit of power, is to go and take back your school boards through their vote. Remove the school boards. There are actionable measures within school boards and municipalities to challenge these levels of governance and officials. Take that back. Take back your schools. You can do this. Cost you $100. Get a few signatures. Replace these officials. These officials are the ones that are actually responsible for your suffering. Why are they inflicting the suffering on you? One of two things. They are either sold out to the system. They've got, you know, we used to say they've got pictures of them with sheep, was what we used to say, but that would probably get me in trouble, and you now do. But they're either sold out to the system or they are dependent on the system funding. If you can replace the system funding, if you have to support your own school boards from your community, you're probably going to have a better school board doing it that way than depending on the rules of the corrupt system. So these are simple things that we can do immediately. And this is when people understand that the law stands for them. The law is ironclad in Canada. What they're trying to push from the top down cannot be enforced by law. Mandates are not law. The actual law stands for the community and the individual. They need to understand how to defend themselves with that law. The instant they can do that, which is where ethics. A reviewer comes in giving them the base amount of law that they need to defend themselves and to push back. Once the community realizes this, then they can replace these boards within their communities. It ends there.
Absolutely.
The pain and suffering ends there. So it's far more simple than people realize.
Wayne, what can I say, buddy? Real quick, share people where you can be found, and I'm going to have to let you go. But this hour went real quick, and I've absolutely enjoyed this conversation. I hope we can do this again real soon. And quickly share with people can find you.
EthicsOverFear.com. That's primarily where you'll find us. Our team has been working very, very hard on rebuilding a secure site in a place where it can't be touched. So we're confident now in the information that we're going to be able to really start putting out there. There's some good stuff there to start with. People need to get informed with the basics. The basics are fine there. Over the next couple of months, though, guys, wow. You guys are not going to believe what you're going to see coming across there. So, yeah,
EthicsOverFear.com.
The fruit is starting to blossom with some of the work that are so many of the networks out there. We need to give – there's a lot of people out there doing really good work behind the scenes, and it's not being seen publicly because it's been difficult at best to disseminate truthful information. But adapt, improvise, and overcome is what we as Canadians do better than anybody else on Earth, and they are only making us stronger every single day.
Thanks, Wayne, for coming in today, buddy. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks for giving me a place to vent.
You're welcome. And we'll do it again soon, bud. Thanks.
My pleasure.
I'll be back in a couple of minutes, folks. Welcome back to Third Hour, folks, and thanks again for Wayne coming in. I promise to get that guy back on real soon because he's just a wealth of information. I love what he has to share with the audience. Third Hour here, I have Ron Tyler back in. Ron has the organization called Emergency Management Associates. He really follows geological and volcanic and different events going around the planet, but I know that there's something he wants to talk about right off the bat. Welcome back to the show, Ron, and always a pleasure having you in.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being with you. I look forward to it every time you call or want to have me on. I'm more than game. I'll do it in a heartbeat. It's great to have you here.
So what's going on that you wanted to talk about?
Well, we're simulcast. You're live on my show as well at this point in time. So we have now 231 people watching the program, which is great. And we may have even more than that by the time it's all done. One of the things I want to talk about is a headline that came up on the BBC News. This headline says, Austria orders nationwide lockdown for people that have been unvaccinated. Austria is placing about 2 million unvaccinated people in lockdown starting Monday, amid record infection levels and growing pressure on hospitals. The chancellor, his name's Alexander Schellenberg, said that they are not taking this step lightly, but it is necessary. Unvaccinated people will only be able to leave home for a limited number of reasons, like working or buying food. About 65% of Austria's population is fully vaccinated, one of the lowest vaccination rates in Western Europe. Unreal. Meanwhile, the seven-day infection rate is more than 800 cases per 100,000 people, one of the highest in Europe. Now, 800 cases per 100,000 people might be incredible for Europe. However, earlier this week in Salt Lake City, Utah, one city had 800 cases, 800 new cases. In some cases, they've had as many as 1,400 new cases in one day. One day. So this is kind of, in my opinion, 800 cases per 100 or 100,000 people, the highest in Europe. And they're taking this kind of step to lock down everybody. It says, overall, Europe has again become the region most seriously affected by the pandemic. And several countries are introducing restrictions and warning of rising cases. The unvaccinated were already barred from visiting restaurants, hairdressers, and cinemas, but are now going to be told to stay at home. Schellenberg said, quote, in reality, we have told one-third of the population you will not leave your apartment anymore apart from certain reasons. That is a mass reduction in contacts between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated.
Of course.
The government says that police will carry out spot checks in public spaces to determine their vaccination status. The new measures, according to Health Minister Wolfgang Muckstein, the new measures, which do not apply to children under 12 or those who have recently recovered, will initially last for 10 days. Incredible. So the new measures are only going to last for 10 days, and they're probably going to reassess things after that time.
But children, do you believe it's only going to last 10 days? But if they get that level of control, they're not going to go 10 days. In 10 days, they'll make an announcement that's being extended. It's just absolute insanity what we're seeing. But what I'm seeing, Ron, and I've been looking at this extensively this week, I've listened to some very good reports about what's actually going on in Europe, what's going on in places like Israel, that what we're seeing, that is a majority, overwhelming majority of these new cases that are rising are people that have been double vaccinated.
Yes.
And I'm seeing these numbers come across the board from all over the world. Some of them high is a lot. Well, I got one this morning, and I haven't been able to vet it yet, but I forget what country it is, reported 100% of the new cases in their in the systems there are people that have been double vaccinated. Well, what the heck is going on there, Ron? Where is it, where are these new variants coming from? What I believe they've created is a perfect bioweapon. It's going to manifest itself that they're injecting this into our bodies, and who knows what they're putting in there? What kind of mechanisms are in there? We don't know. They're not compelled to show it because of the Emergency Use Act that they're under right now. So yeah. What are they actually putting into these injections? We, like I said, with nanotechnology the way it is now, Ron, and that's something that I've talked about lots of times on my show over the years, is what they can actually do with nanotechnology. I mean, they can make stuff so small that you can't see it. So really, we're dealing with psychopaths. We're dealing with the most evil entities that the world's ever seen. These people come, I got to use this expression because it's so true, they come right from the pits of hell. That yeah. What they're doing to society right now is beyond evil. It is absolutely satanic at all levels. And I don't want to get into that too deep, but that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, I think so too. It's disparaging to the population, and it's destroying mankind. It really is. The stats that I have, and I'm going to do a complete report on Rumble within the next 48 hours. I promise I will be on Rumble within the next 48 hours and do a complete report, probably going to last a couple hours. I have statistics and I have videos to prove every contention that you and I are talking about tonight. And I'm going to bring it out and I'm going to blow the whole situation up. Yes, it is a bioweapon. And I believe the people that have taken the jab are spreading it. The statistics that I have prove it. Mm-hmm. And people are getting sicker than normal with this bioweapon that has been released on everybody. But the people that are getting sicker more often are people that have taken the jab.
Well, of course, because of what it does to the immune system. They've already proven what it actually affects it has on the human being's immune system, that every time you take a jab, you're reducing your immune ability in your body. Well, that's the perfect scenario, Ron, if you want to keep people getting sick. And, of course, when they get sick, it's a new variant. And, of course, you have to bring out a booster because they're now telling us that the vaccines that are out are only effective to a certain point. Some of them lose their efficiency after 6 months. Well, of course, they've got to bring that up because now you're going to need a booster. And then you're going to need another booster. And eventually, your immune systems are going to be so weak that you get a dust of air in your nose and it's going to make you sick. Yeah. Perfect. Get another booster.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Hold on.
That's what
it looks really like. Messed up in Denmark. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's exactly what it looks like. It's worse than I could have ever expected it to be. And the program that I'm going to be doing Monday or Tuesday, it's going to blow this thing right out of the water because everybody's got to know about it. Yes, I understand people on BitChute talking about it, professors, doctors, and everything, and their programs are being taken off the air. Their programs have been deleted off of Facebook Live that they have done. Heaven forbid that the word gets out. And then on top of all of that, we had 1,475 nurses and doctors that were fired in New York alone this week. That tells me that the hospitals in New York are not going to be able to handle any kind of cases. Heaven forbid, if they're short 1,450 doctors and nurses at various hospitals, there's nobody in the hospitals to take care of anybody.
Exactly. What they've just done in Ontario and Quebec Originally, they were mandating vaccines for all people in the health system. So they've withdrawn that this week because they know the effect it's going to have, where we have in Canada thousands and thousands, not just a few nurses ready to walk off the job, and they are walking off the job and they're being released from their positions. They cannot replace these people in the healthcare system. And Canada is in big trouble right now, Ron. You wouldn't believe what's going on up here. You guys think you got it bad down there. Come up and see what Justin Trudeau is doing to Canada.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's incredible. I never thought any of this would even happen. And yet, not only is it happening, but people are dying right and left. And I have another story that I'm working on that's going to be part of my broadcast on Rumble this week that says that this was started as early as 2015.
I think before that, Ron, actually.
I agree.
I've looked into that quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it was planned a long, long time ago. This was never, ever about a virus. It was about getting this vaccine into as many people as they possibly can. Well, why would they want to do that? Why would they want to? I've never in my life seen something pushed so hard. But in the same mouthful, years ago, in our research and conversation that I've had with other people, we talked about, you know, this particular time when society was going to be brought under a complete control mechanism. Yeah. And we talked about two or three different ways they could do that. But the number one thing that we talked about was a virus released on the planet, or the complete collapse of the financial system. Well, I believe they're going to come at it with both those entities in the very near future, that we're seeing a setup right now for a cashless society. We know that the whole banking system could collapse in a heartbeat. They control the banks. They control the money. If they really, Ron, wanted to bring complete chaos into society, they could hit us with another whammo right now and collapse the dollar worldwide as we know it. You think about the chaos that would bring into society and what that would do to people's minds. When people are put into a state of chaos, they can't think straight. And boy, they're going to play on that along with the fear factor. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Just a few thoughts.
Right. It's absolutely right. Earlier this week, I did a story on what is going on. You talked about the money situation and the banks. I came out, Glenn Beck first brought this out earlier this week, and then I followed up on it, and I found out that it's absolutely true, mm-hmm. and the banks are all into this as well, but the major banks are nearing collapse levels, and they're getting ready to close down, okay? Wells Fargo, the banks to avoid, everybody, in case you hadn't already heard on one of my other broadcasts, the banks, Wells Fargo, Citibank, Chase Bank, Goldman Sachs, Amalgamated Bank, and Morgan Stanley, those are the banks to get out of right now. Go to a local bank or a credit union, whether you are in Canada or anywhere in the world. If you're associated with one of these banks, you need to go and reassociate yourself with a local bank and or a credit union, because your bank is getting ready to hold on to your money.
Yep.
And if they do it, your money's gone.
Yep.
Your money is not going to be available.
I agree. Canadian government, believe it or not, has set up legislation right along those lines under perceived financial emergency in Canada. The government has the power to seize everybody's bank accounts. How do you like that? I know Steve wanted to add something to the conversation here. Ron, Steve?
Yes, I did. Barry and Ron. Interestingly enough, he mentioned Wells Fargo Bank. It's been within the last 2 years, Wells Fargo Bank has been thrown out of at least three states, Michigan, Indiana, and Illinois, maybe even Ohio, four states. They've virtually left, or they were thrown out of those four states. You cannot find anything but a corporate office in Chicago.
Gosh. Isn't that something?
They've been caught at least three or four times laundering billions of dollars through of drug money through their banks.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. There's
same thing with the Bank of Montreal in Canada. They've been caught with so much dirty laundry here in the last 5 years. I'm surprised that people even deal with them, but they do. Go ahead.
They closed a Wells Fargo bank in Valdez, North Carolina, where I lived for several months before I moved to my present location. They closed a Wells Fargo bank about a year or so ago. The ATM is still available, but you can't go into the bank. You can't go in the bank. It's closed. It's locked up tight. And I understand that there are several other locations around as well, not just in Valdez, but other locations here in North Carolina as well. I was wondering about it, and so I started asking around, and more people have told me about it. This is unreal. Never in my life have I ever seen a bank close down. Never.
Oh, I just listened to a video that Gerald Celente did, and I recommend people go listen to that man because he seems to be very, very knowledgeable about what's going on with the financial systems. And what he had to say there, Ron, was actually pretty well reiterating what I've said just here in the last little bit about what's going to happen with our financial systems in the very near future. You know, the governments have been talking, all these government agencies and all these government entities have been talking about the Great Reset for months and months and months now. I believe we're really close to that right now. I believe that. And yeah. Gerald Celente, go listen to what he had to say because he's a very, very knowledgeable man. And he pretty well is saying what I'm saying right now, that things are on a tipping point right now. So yeah. What are they going to do with that, Ron? Well, my one thought on that is that if they do collapse the financial systems, you can imagine the chaos that would create in society, and it also an opportunity for them to come along in their big white shining horse with the answer to the problem. Folks, don't worry about anything. Go back to work. We're going to have a little bit of adjustment in the financial systems, but carry on with life as normal. Oh, but wait a second. You've got to put this little chip in your wrist. Outside of that, everything's good. Go back to work. That's where they're going, Ron. And I see that coming very soon.
I see it coming, too. This is just the beginning, everybody. We've been talking about preparing and getting ready. I told you about 2 weeks ago about getting your money and putting money away a little bit at a time. I'm not saying grab your money out of the bank right now, but I'm telling you, if you're in one of those banks, take it out and put it in a local bank or credit union, wherever you're at. Don't let them take your money and leave because they'll keep it. Okay? You've got to do that. But it's not just that. Take as much money as you feel you can get away with and put it away someplace. Put it in a bag in your emergency supply kit. Because when things get really bad, and yes, the power is going to get shut down. That's the other way they're going to control us. They're going to shut down the power. And if you don't have power, you're going to be cold in the wintertime. And it's not just being cold in the wintertime. You're not going to be able to get to an ATM to get your money out. So my best advice, and I think Barry would probably agree, Barry and Steve both would probably agree, is to put as much money away in a safe location within your home in an emergency supply kit so that when it gets really bad, you've at least got some money to use, to barter with, but don't keep anything larger than a $10 bill. Keep it all small denominations of cash. That way you're liquid. If you give a store over a $10 bill, it's likely they're not going to be able to cash it. I went into a place to get some food the other day, and it said they prefer if you have cash to have exact change. They're getting to the point in that particular store where they can't even give change. And that's the way it's going to be everywhere. This started years ago.
I kind of wonder, though, Ron, if cash is such a great idea. If they collapse the system that we're in right now, your cash would basically be not worth. I know we could use it to light a fire. I think more important right now that people prepare themselves with food to make sure that you've got a good supply of food on hand. If you're able to do that right now, I recommend that because I know we're going to have problems with food. I recommend you all have a firearm because your neighbor will kill you for food if the system collapses. As far as money goes, I think you're better off myself to maybe put that money into precious metals. Now, you'll get a lot of kickback against that, but I honestly believe that even if money was to collapse, that precious metals would hold some of their value. So I've actually, you know, I haven't got no money, but any money that I've had here in the last two or three, 4 years, I've managed to put a little bit of silver away. I think that would be a good thing to do myself.
Great. I have some here, too.
If you're able to do that, guys, I mean, if it collapses, then what good is that money that you put away going to be?
Yeah.
It's not going to be any good at all, because when they collapse the dollar, what I believe they will do, of course, they'll come along as the knight on the white horse with the answer, because it will create chaos in our society that I don't think society has ever, ever experienced. The thing about chaos, when people are subjected to a state of chaos, their minds don't work properly. We don't function. Our brains are just absolutely scattered. Some of the endorphins that are released into our brain actually gets us thinking completely unrationally. So that being said, they will use that against society. And, of course, people will do anything to get rid of that scream in their brain. And like I said, along they'll come with the new system. The RFID chip, I believe, is going to be the big player. Coming forward. And, you know, a lot of my thoughts now, Ron, are based on what I see and what I've read in Revelations over the last 3 or 4 years, where I've studied the Mark of the Beast system and how that's going to play out in society. Well, we look at our society now in Canada here. We've gotten to a point where now we have vaccine passports and they're restricting some of our freedoms. But guaranteed, that's not going to stop. That'll just be the tip of the iceberg, that in the next couple, 3 months, it's going to come out that I won't be able to go to a bank. I won't be able to go into a grocery store. I will not be able to function in society unless I bend to the mandates. Well, what is that? That is the Mark of the Beast system playing out right in front of our eyes. The RFID chip, I said, will be a big part of that. I honestly believe that. And by collapsing our dollar, that's all it's going to take in society, especially society the way it is now. We've been just lambasted here in the last 20 months. We've got people just running around like chickens with their heads cut off. They're losing their businesses. They're torn. We have divisions in society like we've never seen before. It's all by design. But all you have to do is now throw another firecracker in there. It could be quite an interesting time in human history, Ron. What do you think?
Oh, I totally agree. This is probably one of the most interesting times in history. And it's sad because so many people are being fired from their jobs because they won't take the stick and they don't have any money. Nobody has any money. And this is by design. This money issue was by design. This has been going on for a long, long time. If you don't believe me, go look at it. You guys out there, if you don't believe me, look at the entire picture. Go back and pull information. I've been doing a ton of research for my programs this coming week. There's a lot of stuff going on, and if you're not ready, you're going to be bamboozled. You know, and this stuff about these mandates. I've made jokes about it being a real mandate is two guys going out to dinner. Well, guess what? Right now, the United States Supreme Court are taking up the mandate situation because Biden, the president of the United States, supposedly put up this thing about mandates. Everybody by January 6th has to have the jab or else. You're not going to be able to do anything. Your money's not going to be able to be good because they're not going to allow you to go spend it. And your job is gone. But if the U.S. Supreme Court, which is unlikely because most of the time, until lately, the U.S. Supreme Court has stood up for the Constitution. But it's unlikely that it's going to happen. But it could. Because the newest justices that were appointed by President Trump are leaning to the left. They're all leaning to the left. And if that happens, we're screwed. We're screwed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
So, and wait a second, back up just for a second. You said January 6th, Biden has mandated mass vaccination across the United States of America, mandatory for everybody? Is that what you said?
Yes.
I hadn't heard that yet. That's all news to me.
Yeah, well, he mandated. And there are 19 states.
For the whole population.
Yeah, there are 19 states here in the United States that have taken him to court, and the U.S. appellate court has stopped the mandate for right now. It's going to go to Supreme Court.
It's that is not going to fly with the American. That's not going to fly with the American people, Ron.
No, it's not.
It's talking about poking the bear in the eye.
Yeah, they're poking the big bear in the big eye, and they're about to get stabbed themselves. And I'm not talking about anybody necessarily getting hurt, but I'll tell you, the American people are not going to stand for it. This game that they put into play is not over, not by a long shot. Not even by a long shot. People aren't going to stand for it. No way.
Well, insanity is unsustainable. And what we're seeing right now is insanity. I believe from what I'm seeing here in the last little while, I mean, if you'd asked me this question a couple months ago, I probably would have given you a different answer, whether or not we're actually starting to turn this thing around. But I believe we are. I see people rising up. I guess the last hour would some of the stuff that I've been privy to here in conversations in the last couple of weeks has really got me fired up, you might say, Ron, that all is not lost, that we are going to turn the tables on this. I honestly believe that. Or, like you and me, we'll die trying.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Well, what else is more important right now in our lives, my friend? Nothing. Period. Nothing.
Yeah. I put myself out there, and a lot of people literally around the country now, even on Facebook, I am known as a public figure because I've come out and stood up and said, no, I am a public figure because now I've got 22,000 plus people watching my program. I've got all sorts of stuff going on. I have people that I talk to on a daily basis. And now I've got your show in Canada going on now, and people are starting to hear me literally all over the United States. And I have a feeling before long, I'll be talking to larger groups of people around this country. And if that's the case, oh, bring it on. Bring it on. Because I will be one of many people that say, no, we're not going to take it. We're not. And it's not just me. It's millions of people like me and like you that are going to say, no, we're not going to put up with this crap anymore. We're bigger than all of them put together. We're totally bigger than all of them put together. So, you know, I've said this word or this phrase that Clint Eastwood made famous a lot of years ago, go ahead, make my day. I'm ready. And all of you should get ready. I don't have everything I used to have, but I will. I will. I think everybody should get ready. And Barry mentioned getting something to protect yourself with. You need to do it. You need to Absolutely. Do it right now.
There's the dog. I'm over on YouTube. I'm looking at your dog right now there, Ron. I like your puppy.
This is Crystal. Holly won't come near me. She's sitting over in her bed next to my desk, and she doesn't want any part of this. Sometimes she does, but not often. This is Crystal. Can you say hi, Crystal? Hi. Hey, hi.
Oh, well, anybody that loves dogs is a good person in my life. I see people abusing dogs, and I just want to kill them, Ron.
Oh, yeah.
The best thing in life is a dog, period.
Yeah. I agree.
They're a great judge of character, too.
Oh, isn't that
But my dog don't like you. Get away. Let's shift gears just for a few minutes here, Ron. Let's talk about some of the geological events that you've been seeing going on in the planet here in the last couple of weeks, because there's some pretty crazy stuff going on out there.
Yeah, there is.
You don't mind.
Oh, absolutely. I've been talking about that for the past 2 months now, but, and I have not a problem with it. I'll talk about it every day, and I have been. Right now, just before you came on with me, before you guys brought in Skype here, I showed a video put together by Geology Hub, and they pointed out there's today 47 erupting volcanoes literally all over the world. All over the world. The biggest one right now that we should all be concerned about, there's actually two of them. One in Kadavar, Indonesia, in Papua New Guinea. In Papua New Guinea, I shouldn't say Indonesia, it's in Papua New Guinea. But Kadavar volcano, that's a big deal. And it's been erupting off and on. And the other one we should really, and also Fuego volcano in Guatemala too. It's been erupting too. There's a bunch of them. I could name a bunch of them. I can name probably 25 off the top of my head that are erupting right now. But the other one is this, and we've been talking about this a long, long time, and that is Cumbre Vieja volcano in the Canary Islands, on La Palma Island, Canary Islands. Everybody should be concerned about that volcano. Why? Look what has happened over there. Look what has happened over there. That volcano is the part of the volcano that has been erupting is on the south side spine of the island. Spine of the island is right down the center of the island. And I'm going in to try to find a picture to show you guys from one of my previous programs here. All of my programs I have highlighted here, and I can pull up any program that I want and pull up the information on it, just so everybody knows. But I've been talking about this for 2 months now, and everybody has to be aware of it. You cannot not know about it at this point in time. You can't. We've been talking about it a long, long time, but this thing has been erupting now for 2 months. And it's not just that. It's not just that, ladies and gentlemen. It is now pushing, it is 55 days. But what is interesting about what is going on now is that this volcano has been slowing down earthquake-wise. There has not been that many earthquakes as of late. Okay? It appears the seismic level that has been going on has slowed down. Will it continue? I don't know. However, I am not at liberty right now to come completely clean as to what is going on. I can't. Okay, I just put up a picture of where this volcano was erupting here so you guys can see it. Okay? This is the main summit is at the very top of this photograph. But what is going on here is something that nobody even realizes. Okay? I have evidence, I have photographs, I have video. And I have video that is ongoing being shown on YouTube, and it's not the real video. The video has been halted at whatever point, and it doesn't change. The video does not change. And the only time it changes is when it gets dark at La Palma Island. That's when they put up a different picture. And it's not video. It's a picture of what is going on there. They claim it's video and it's not. It's a picture. It's a still picture of what they want to show you. But several associates and I have been pulling information together. Yes, we know that there's been a volcanic eruption there. But what you don't know, around that entire area, they have a bunch of military vehicles there as well. And they've set up studio cameras and studio lighting. Studio lighting. And you can see some of this on skylive.com on YouTube. You just go to Skylive. No, it's not .com. It's skylive.tv on YouTube. And you can see some of this. It's the observatory at La Palma. But you'll see that the video does not change. They only show you like two or three pictures all day long. When they first started, it was live. But now it's getting to be a theatrical production. They're not showing you but what they want us to know about. Now, Canary Island TV is a little bit different. They're showing some eruptive status of the lava coming out of the one cone or two or maybe two other fissures. But the lava rate has also slowed down. It's not been erupting like it was even 2 weeks ago. It has gradually slowed down. Does that mean that the volcanic eruption at La Palma Island is over? I don't know. I don't think so. We also have some evidence, because there have been earthquakes around the island, even up on the north side of the island. We've had some volcanic uplift, magma from beneath the surface that is being pushed up. And there's been uplift on the northern side of the island, which is magma coming into the volcano, incoming magma. But now we're starting to see larger earthquakes on the east side of the island, 36 kilometers deep, which is about 34 miles deep, give or take a mile. So we have volcanic pressures on the east side of the island now. We didn't have that. Now, there are some scientists, and I'm not going to give any names right now because I have given a couple names in the past, but I don't want to give any names right now today. But there's some scientists that are saying, this isn't volcanic, it's tectonic. I'm going, really? Yes, there are tectonic pressures. There are faults, earthquake faults on that island, natural faults, but not where these earthquakes are hitting. And these are not deep earthquakes. These are 34 miles deep. That's not deep. That's very shallow in all relative terms. It's a very shallow earthquake. We've seen deep earthquakes, for example, over in the South Pacific. A deep earthquake in the South Pacific, 760 kilometers deep in the South Pacific. That one happened over on the Mariana Island chain, in that deep ridge that's in the middle of the Pacific down there in the South Pacific, south of Guam. 760 miles deep. That's huge. Okay? And it's not just there. It's a lot of places. We've seen earthquakes down in south of Fiji, 436 kilometers deep. We've seen earthquakes in Tonga, down in the Kermadec Islands that are 600 kilometers deep. I'm serious, 600 kilometers deep. That's huge. That's really deep. That's down into what they call the asthenosphere, which is where the liquid magma is, what they call plastic magma beneath the crust. And for a lot of people that have not watched my program closely over the past two and a half years that we've been on the air, But for those people that haven't watched it, I want to tell you this. The crust of the earth that you walk on is anywhere from 39 miles deep to 69 miles deep. And below that, we have liquid flowing magma beneath that. And then magma coming from that asthenosphere below the crust, going into the crust through magma tunnels. magma chambers inside the crust of the Earth. And those magma channels lead to all the volcanoes around the world. And where you see a lot of earthquakes now that didn't used to be, guess what, folks? We're having volcanoes that are waking up. There are volcanoes all over this world, all over the United States, all over Canada, that are waking up. And some of these volcanoes are not noticeable because over the millions of years, the glaciers have worn these volcanoes down. But now they're waking up. And now these earthquakes are below the volcanoes, and people are going, oh, that's just an earthquake. No, it's not. It's not.
There well, I got one about 50 miles away from me here, so I hope it don't wake up.
Oh, it's waking up. It's waking up. About two weeks ago after we last talked, I pulled information. I'm going, Barry,
I'm talking about the one up in the Nass Valley here.
Yeah.
And the last time it let go was, I believe, 300 and I looked at it a couple of weeks ago, 327 years or 370 years ago, somewhere around that time frame. But what it did up in my neck of the woods here, up in the Nass Valley, it covered the whole Nass Valley right up to the Nass River. It actually blocked, believe it or not, the Nass River for about 2 days. It actually blocked the river. And that's what stopped it. And it flowed west towards Canyon City, and that's where it stopped. But the flow we had here, if it happens again, well, I'll tell you, there's a couple of villages up here that are going to have an awfully bad day. But if it's getting active again, I'll have to keep my eye on that one. But go ahead,
Ron. There's small earthquakes hitting. I watch Earthquake Canada. You guys that are watching this program, you guys can access this information too. It's not privy to just me and scientists. You can find this information everywhere. But this volcano around where Barry lives, not that far from where Barry lives, 2.5 earthquakes, 1.5 tremors, 0.5 tremors. And it doesn't happen all the time. But when I've seen it, I'm going, now, wait a cotton-picking minute. Sayaks volcano, tremors, and it's been steaming. Sayaks volcano. They're all over. These volcanoes are all over. And what I'm finding in my research this past 2 weeks, I didn't know there was this many volcanoes going off around, or not going off, but that many volcanoes around Canada. Canada has a buttload of volcanoes.
Yeah, we've got quite a few of them up here, but most people aren't aware of that.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to look into that, Ron, because, like I said, that volcano is not far from me. Anybody wants to look into it, they just Google volcano Nass Valley, and it'll tell you the history about that volcano and the potential it has. So I hope it's not coming active, because that's pretty close to home here. But the lava is going to go the other direction anyway, so.
Yeah, but it is. You're right.
That'd make it for a good movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I get lots of YouTube hits on that, bud.
Wouldn't it be fun? I think that would be a fun movie. Boy, I would love to do that. Gosh. It would be
another fact is, you're correct about volcanoes and earthquakes. We are seeing upticks around the world, and I've looked at those numbers myself. A lot of people say we're not, but if you look at the numbers over the last 5 years, say, you'll see a definite increase in earthquake activity around the planet right now. That's not deniable. So we know we're in volatile times. 700 kilometers, a kilometer, actually 600 kilometers, Ron, would be about 400 miles.
Yeah,
that's the ratio of kilometers, are a little bit smaller than a mile. But if it's 600 kilometers down, that's 400 miles into the Earth. If this earthquakes are happening, that's in the magma chambers you're talking about then,
right?
Correct?
Yep. Surely is.
Wow.
You know, and when we see...
So that's magma moving, of course, correct?
Right. And when we see earthquakes around volcanoes that are, say, 39 miles deep, 35 miles deep, now we're talking in the crust.
Yeah, getting into the mantle.
Yeah, it could be if there's an earthquake fault, and if there's a river around that, it could be an earthquake fault. Usually around rivers, it's always an earthquake fault. I can't say 100%, almost 100%. There's an earthquake fault involved with the river. It could be tectonic. But I'll tell you, you have to start looking. And that's where I've been doing. What I've been doing is I've been looking at these weird places where earthquakes are happening. And bingo, bango, boingo. Guess what? There's usually a volcano involved. How do you know that? You go to take that same location. You go to Google Earth and you zoom in. Zoom in on that location. If there's an the term escapes my mind. There's a word where magma doesn't go through the surface, but it pushes up into the earth and raises that particular ground. And usually right. It is in a round or almost oval circle. Right. And that ground has magma. It has lava underneath it. And usually that's all it is. If it's a hot spot, and that's the other thing too, is I look at hot spots. And then I go over to Google Earth and look at it. What do we have there? If it's a hot spot, sometimes I have even found these obtrusions of lava. They haven't broken the surface, but it's a round circle. And that's exactly what that is. It's a volcano that didn't make it to the surface. Okay? And there are some volcanoes, like I said earlier, that have been worn down by glaciers. And guess what, guys? There are earthquakes hitting those areas, earthquakes and tremors. They're hitting. And everybody needs to be aware of it.
Well, we're interesting times, aren't we? Who knows what's going to happen next week? We're definitely in interesting times, to say the least.
Oh, yeah, pretty much so.
But it's not in our hands. You know, the Bible tells us that we will see earthquakes and explosions and volcanic activity in diverse places, and now we're seeing it. So it's all playing out exactly the way I see it. It's supposed to be playing out. Really, I do. I know that, you know, what you're talking about, La Palma, like the worst-case scenario over there, Ron, is, of course, we see the separation of land that science has talked about over the years. One of the biggest possible landslides that we've ever experienced. Mm-hmm. That is a possibility right there and right now. And if that was to happen, of course, that would be one of the worst disasters the world's ever seen. So let's hope that doesn't happen, because it'd be a bad day, but it would play into certain timetables right now that we see unfolding. So you're right. We have to pay attention, but it's not in our hands, man. It's out of our control. But it's important that we do make people aware of it.
Yeah.
Or get our thoughts on that anyway. So it's good having you in to share those thoughts.
As long as we have it in people's thoughts, we present it to people. It's like you can only lead a horse to water. You can't make him drink. But at some point, they're going to get – the light's going to come on, and they're going to see that light and go, oh, my gosh, there's a guy named Ron. I can't remember his name. He talked about this. The light's going to come on. And it's coming on more and more with people. I'm seeing it almost on a daily basis. I get letters or messages from people saying, I didn't think I'd ever be writing you, but I'm seeing things that you're talking about, and I think you're right, and I'm sorry I never paid attention until now. What's going on? Everybody needs to wake up. It's happening. The last days are here. We're living in the last days. Now, I have people all the time say, oh, hurry up, Jesus, come. I don't think Jesus is ready to come right now. He doesn't even know.
Nobody knows. God, nobody can put a date on that.
No, nobody.
We can just read what he's told us to prepare ourselves and to the signs that he will give us, and that's all we can do at this time. Nobody can say that we're in this particular period of time, but we can follow his writings about this time, and it kind of lays down a guideline and a timeline for us, and we're definitely in those times where we are. Nobody can say for sure, but we're definitely in those times. I would agree. Go ahead for a minute, Ron. We're almost out of time here, bud.
Yeah, I was watching that too. We're there. You got to watch the signs. I think we might have 7 years. I honestly think we may have 7 years. But if we're in those 7 years, they're going to be very hard years. We've talked about emergency preparedness till I'm blue in the face, and I'm not going to stop. I've been talking about it for 2.5 years, and things are getting worse. I want to, and Barry echoes the same thing too. We want to get people aware of what is going on around them so they understand they need to get on the stick and prepare. You need to get your food storage up to snuff for at least 6 months worth of food, if not 2 years. Once you get 6 months, push to a year. Once you get a year, push to a year and a half. Then once you get that year and a half, push to 2 years worth of food. You need to do that. You need to do that. We don't have much time left. And I know with the money situation, money is tight for everybody. I know that for a fact. It's tight for everybody. But if you can put a few dollars here and a few dollars there into food storage or getting survival food, you're going to be further ahead than somebody that has not done it. And when we're talking about survival food and food storage, don't forget water. Make sure you're able to have water available. And some people say, what about water purification tablets? Yes. I'm going to say yes. What about life straws that can purify up to 500 gallons? Yes. You can get 2 or 3 life straws per person. They're not that expensive.
$20.
$20.
That's all it is, because I have them.
You know?
I can take them out of the bush when I'm picking mushrooms and take the dirtiest water in the world and drink it.
Yeah. It's worth it to have. It's worth it to have. I want people to be prepared. I don't want to see somebody living on the street. I've got friends that are living on the street today. I've got other friends that are nearly on the street. There are people that are alive and just barely have a roof over their head today. Because if they are honest with themselves, they're living paycheck to paycheck. And if that paycheck ends, the next month they're out on the street. And people are so close. People are so close, it's not even funny. In my last words tonight, please, folks, take this seriously. Barry and I are not just spouting steam. We're not just talking out of the other side of our face. This is the truth. You need to get on the stick and get yourselves ready. Things are happening. Get something to protect yourselves, or several things to protect yourselves, because people are going to come and try to take what you have. And if it's not Joe Blow the ragman, the bad guy, it's going to be Joe Blow the idiot cop that's going to arrest you, put you someplace that you don't want to be because you're not obeying the powers that be, the Nazis. Excuse me for even saying that word. This is the first time I've said that word in years. But the bad guys are coming. They're putting people in Austria in lockdown. They're taking people in Australia and locking them up. People in Australia are out there protesting. And yes, there are more people protesting than there are police. But the police are grabbing people. They're grabbing people. And I can't believe it. The videos that I've seen are just horrendous. Unreal. People in New Zealand the same way. I have dear friends down there. Very, very dear friends. Australia and New Zealand. And the way people are being treated, I wouldn't want my worst enemy treated that way. In Canada, things are happening that are unheard of. And I've got my dear friend Barry and many other people there. I don't want that to happen to anyone. No way. No way. Get prepared and do it now. You're not going to have much time left. And don't tell anybody what you're doing unless they're very, very close to you. Unless they're very close to you. Because you don't want people coming to your house, knocking on your door, saying, I know what you got, give it to me. Don't let that happen either. Okay.
Thanks for coming in today, Ron.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Let's get together more often and play.
Well, yeah, thanks for sharing thoughts with us today. I a lot of things you said I could reiterate on, but we've talked about these things for a long time now, and we see them come into play. So to me, like you said, important that people kind of prepare for a rainy day. It's always good to have something and need it than to need it and not have it.
Correct.
You can always use it if you don't need it, and hopefully we don't get to that point. But I see some pretty crazy times coming up. Above all, to me, the most important thing in your life right now, in my life right now, is having a very, very strong connection with Jesus Christ. And I say prayers every day. I ask for strength and wisdom and guidance because I know I'm going to need that. I know I'm going to need courage. I'm going to be persecuted here in the future going ways that I wouldn't wish on anybody, but I know those times are coming. I follow the book, man, and what the book is telling me about this particular time in history, I have to go with that. He wrote the book. He knows the end. Now, you're absolutely correct, Ron. I believe we're going to get into an age of sorrows, but there's a big shining light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm heading for that light, my friend. So thanks for coming in today, Ron.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you. God bless you, Barry. It's so wonderful. You and Steve are great. I love you both.
Well, thank you. Okay, folks. Well, it's been an enjoyable show today. I've really enjoyed my guest today. Boy, Wayne got me tickled really good. Shaziz, I'll tell you that, man, I'm going to have back in real soon because I could just sit here and let him go for an hour, and he still wouldn't talk about a third of the things that he's got in his brain. And Ron, thanks for bringing us up to date with what's going on with earthquakes and geological events and things that we have to follow. Not that it's anything we have a control over, but it's always good to be prepared. Yes. I'll be back next week, guys. Same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in today. Been enjoying enjoyable show from my perspective. I hope you guys enjoyed the show today. Bye for now.